This episode of Retronauts is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Go to expressvpn.com/retronauts to learn more.
This week in Retronauts, Hydrocity, Hydro City, it doesn't matter, say it however you want, and you'll hear no more about it.
What about Hydro Kitty?
Hello and welcome to Retronauts, starring, starring Stuart Gibb. I'm here, I'm doing it, but I wouldn't call myself a star or anything. I mean, that's up to you guys, but, I mean, if anyone wants to call me that, that would be really, like, validating, so, you know, please do. You know what, I'm going to just go with it. Starring me, Stuart Gibb, hosting an episode on the subject that has done me the most permanent brain damage of all gaming subjects, that is Sonic the Hedgehog, once again, my arch nemesis and most passionate lover, come together once more in a disgusting orgy of rings, and I don't even know where I'm going with this. I think I'm just going to have to introduce the guests because this could get really ugly. Now, what's the best order to do it? You know what? I'm going to introduce our newcomer first. Although you may be familiar with them from YouTube and elsewhere, and that is Shamey McDonald. Hello.
Hello. I'm Shamey. Good.
Yeah, I didn't do a very good prompt.
I'm making a great first impression here, eh?
Well, I didn't do a very good prompt. It's kind of on me. I didn't really leave you anywhere to go from there, did I? I left you dangling.
I'm Shamey. My username is Shamey, so you know how to pronounce it. I like Sonic. Years ago, I did a three-part YouTube series on Sonic, which achieved views. And more, you'll probably know me for that 7-hour Pokemon analysis that sometimes pops up in people's inboxes. I'm very sorry about that. I can't control the algorithm.
So that happened to me once with one of my videos, except it was a video that I did where I synced Inugami Korone to Disturbed Down with the Sickness, and not anything of any like value that I had made.
Oh, so we're in the same boat then?
Yeah, well, I'll come on. I wouldn't say that you're saying our Pokemon analysis has no value. I mean, I would say it. I mean, I'm sure it has some value, you know, there's in there somewhere.
It's a very good contraceptive.
Also joining us is the erstwhile impossible to shake off, once again released from the Retronauts shed, where I've given him both a train set and some Lego Technic, which is said is too hard.
Oh, it's too hard.
It's Dave Bulmer.
Don't like it. Hello, I'm Dave Bulmer. You should all go watch Shamey's Sonic Spitball series. They're my favourite Sonic videos on YouTube. Hi, I'm Dave Bulmer, and I'm from Sonic the Comic the Podcast. That's why I'm here, and that's what my credentials are.
Wow, so, you know, no kind words for Video World 13 is a very
Yeah, but that
Christmas.
Goes without saying they know you. Of course they should. Yes, you should watch his videos as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, cheers. Next time, you just slap me in the face, Dave.
I like how Dave had a better intro for me than I did.
I feel like I gave Dave more to work with. I think this really is on me, you know. But look, what are we doing here? That's the real question. And that's what we get asked every time we're seen anywhere in any context. So yeah. What I wanted to do personally is... you know, I wanted to give Sonic his dues because I think in Retronauts, Sonic's had a bit of a bum experience. Is that a term? A bum experience? I was going to say a bum rap, but I think that means something else. So I just ended up saying a bum experience, which sounds a bit, you know, I mean, it could be any number of things, really, couldn't it?
This is the best start of an episode so far. I agree. Sonic has had a bum experience because...
I've seen the fan art. I know he's had a bum experience.
Because the thing about Retronauts is, until you came along, Stu, it was American, and they don't... They don't get it. They try their best. I'm not having a go, but they've been coded and programmed from their childhoods to think that only plumbers can be in games and anything else is an aberration. And so they didn't embrace Sonic in the way that we did.
Hi, if I may speak more diplomatically, Dave.
Okay.
what I think Dave is trying to say is that Americans really are just fucking useless, gormless arseholes. All of them.
Yeah, that's it. That was it. I was nearly there. But sometimes I'm not. I'm just not articulate enough sometimes.
At the risk of endangering my career, I have to say I agree with Shay on every level.
No, I liked Retronauts before Stu was in it. But it's better now, isn't it, listeners?
I mean, it was great before and now it's great, plus I'm in it, so what can I say?
But they don't have the context for Sonic. They think it was this weird other thing, and it wasn't. It was the best one.
Yeah, we did Sonic most correctly, and as mentioned now in, and yes. I don't say this to sound weary of it, but I think it's come up in about 5 episodes now.
But it's important.
It is important, I agree, but we did Sonic best. But to be honest, that's slightly off topic in a sense, because what I wanted to do for Sonic, and I've been talking about this since like forever, since I was ever on this podcast, is I wanted to do deep dives, and I mean really just get in there, like really nasty, like get the lint out of Sonic's belly button kind of thing, you know, where the lint is facts. Or opinions, yeah. And the belly button is like analysis. I don't know how this works, but the point is, this could be big. This could be a long one, and I wanted to start with Sonic 3 and Knuckles simply for two main reasons. One, it's the best one.
Yep.
I don't think that's in debate, is it? And two, I don't want to go through Sonic 1 and 2 again. Everyone's done. Everyone knows everything about those games.
Yeah.
Like everyone.
This is right. Sonic 1 and 2. Are your it's the ones you start with. If you've got like all the YouTube analyses start with like Sonic 1 and 2, it's like if you talk to an average punter, the ones they are most likely to know are Sonic 1 and 2. But for me, Sonic 3 and Knuckles were the Mac Daddy. They were the great hairy Walloper and Bossack. You know, they were fantastic. Like, they are so good. I don't really play Sonic 1 and 2 anymore. Like, I think they are excellent in and of themselves, but, like, I could play them with massive bells and whistles on, with, like, I could play just a superior version of those games in Sonic 3 and Knuckles. So, you know, like, there's an event horizon, even with Sonic Mania. Like, it's like sometimes, hey, I'll maybe sit down and play some Sonic Mania, and then I think, oh, well, you know, actually I could just play Sonic 3 and Knuckles instead. It's got, like, this gravitational field where anything remotely similar to it, I don't want to play because it's not Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
I have to agree, because sometimes I sit down and I play Sonic Mania, and I just go, oh, this kind of sucks. I'm going to play Sonic 3 and Knuckles instead, which I think is fair, considering it's just basically the same game, except, you know, with no filter. I think that's fair, you know. Being the same game as Sonic 3 and Knuckles is really good. But
it's a
you
good
know,
thing to be the same
being
game
a slight,
as.
Being, like, an appreciably worse Sonic 3 and Knuckles is still pretty outstanding, I would say.
That's exactly why I don't give the game the hard time that you do, but, like, yeah, it's not as good, is it? Like, Sonic, of course it's not. It's an imitation of perfection.
Yeah,
they got
like,
very close. They got admirably close.
Well, it's like SodaStream Coke is just not as good, is it? I mean, it's an aberration. You want an actual proper Coke from, like, you know, a can. You don't want SodaStream. Nobody wants SodaStream. What's this podcast about again?
Don't know. Remembering stuff that happened a long time ago. SodaStream counts as that.
Okay, yes. SodaStream, Sonic, basically the same thing, I would say. Sonic collects those bubbles, doesn't he? There you go. There's the connection.
Yeah.
They both start with S.
Yeah, and that too. Yeah, yeah. And SodaStream, Sega Sonic, it's kind of the same. Do they have SodaStream in America? I assume they do, because they can't get enough of that soda.
I'm not sure they even have it in Scotland. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, you know your favourite Iron Brew?
I do know my favourite Iron Brew.
Well, if you wanted to have Iron Brew but you didn't have actual Iron Brew, what you could do with the SodaStream is you could put some water in it and you would have a sort of a sash, like a syrup, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like
an
Iron Brew flavored syrup, and then you'd put it in, and you could create your very own, very special, nice Iron Brew for you to drink while you're having your neeps and tatties.
I'm going to preface this next sentence with the fact that I'm a little under the weather today. I'm a little stuffy and bad in the head. I've got one in the bloody kitchen.
A SodaStream.
No, an Iron Brew.
Oh, okay. Right, right. Good. Okay.
No, yeah, Soda Stream. Just so I do know what it is.
Well, it's quite all right. It's not something that comes into the popular use these days.
Well,
you know,
the thing about a Soda Stream is you'd be forgiven for not knowing what one is, even if you have one, because we had one, and I didn't know what it was. And it's because once you've got it, that's it. You don't use it again.
No, you just buy it and you go, oh, I've got a Soda Stream. And then you have some of your Soda Stream Coca-Cola and you go, well, that wasn't very nice. And I'm not going to use this again.
Sachet runs out and that's it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, we did use it to make the lovely blue one. I don't know what blue was, but it was very nice.
What, like a blue slush puppy kind of thing?
Well, it must have been blue raspberry, mustn't it? But I just called it, can I have a blue drink, please, Mum? And she'd be like, oh. And she'd have to set up a whole machine.
Oh, yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog's blue.
Oh, there it is. Right back in again. There's just no way to escape, is there? We have to face down staring down the barrel of the inevitability that we're going to have to talk about Sonic 3 and Knuckles at some point.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
our favourite thing.
But I thought that a good start would be, I'm going to ask you first, Shay, what your intro to this game was. Like, how did you come to this game? I suppose, how did you come to Sonic as well, by way of becoming into Sonic, if indeed you are into Sonic?
I'm going to come clean. No, fucking hate Sonic. The last 11 years have been a ruse to get me into this position so I could bam you up.
Wow.
No, like, I
well, this is awkward because the same for me, to be honest. This is awkward as hell.
I got into Sonic back when I was a kid. It was my great aunt bought me Sonic the Comic, the UK's premier hedgehog-based periodical, from 1993 to 2001, even overtaking the small like pamphlet you would get in Gardening World about hedgehogs.
Mm-hmm. And that was a really good pamphlet too.
Yeah, I remember the great controversy about feeding them milk and honey. But anyways, right, sorry, that's a fucking shit joke tangent. Okay, I started reading Sonic the Comic, and I was obsessed with it. I'd read the Beano and the Dandy, and I was which are other UK comics, and I was reading this, and I was like, oh my god, look at what you can do with this, and look at this Sonic character, he's so cool. I didn't even realise he was a video game character for the first few years. Huh. I was born...
Years! The first few years!
Yeah, I was born a year and a day before Sonic 3 launched. You know, I was one by the time it came out.
Oh, dear.
So, I didn't play it as a kid. I do remember, I think it must have been around 98 or 99, going to my pal's house and us playing his Mega Drive. And we played Mickey Mania and we played Sonic 3 and Knuckles because I can, vividly remember the end of Angel Island. That wasn't even like 20 minutes of play. You know, we just played the first level and then switched cartridge. The PlayStation was out at this time.
Yeah.
So my first real time sitting down with this, like I also got Sonic Mega Collection, but I was a kid back then. And I was like, oh, this is new 3D. You know, I'll go and play my fucking cool new 3D Sonic games. It was about 2010. When I really sat down with Sonic 3 for the first time and I fell in love with it, it would be like for the first while it was like daily replays and then it became weekly replays and it's been like kind of like annually replayed since.
Did it, and then it became hourly replays.
I started slowing down and then just sped right the way back up to obsession. I became a speedrunner, which means that like by all accounts, I really fucking hate the game, and I just scream at it every waking second.
This is the sweariest episode I've ever done. I love it.
Oh my god, are we allowed to swear?
Yeah. You're absolutely allowed to swear. Yeah.
Okay, good. I just realised I described the great hairy walloper and boss sack earlier. Mr. Parrish, I am so sorry.
You've brought disarray and shame to the Retronauts podcast. No, it's fine. It's
hooray!
Fine.
Hooray! Well, that's your fault because you brought shame, May, to the podcast. See?
Oh, come now.
See?
Look, it's a fact that I'm very prudish about my language. So.
The thing is, that would be the most Dave Ballmer sentence I've ever heard, except that he said that he owned two copies of the Mr. Blobby CD when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I assumed he had it on tape and he thought, well, the fidelity here isn't quite high enough for me to truly enjoy.
Bang on, Stu. You've got it exactly right there.
Yeah. So he got the CD, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I knew it.
I wanted that sweet instrumental version.
Yeah, then you went on Soulseek and got the flack as soon as Soulseek became a thing.
Yeah.
You were like, give me that sweet, sweet, lossless blobby.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was off air, though, unfortunately, when I said
and
that.
And then you had to buy some solid gold-plated headphones to get the maximum possible sound quality.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and a special wooden volume knob, because mm-hmm. they're the best.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, the Mr. Blobby musical was the fact that Mr. Blobby did a jobby on the motorway.
Ah, he did. Yes.
He did. That was the basis of the single.
I mean, Mr. Blobby, of course, now has having been sold, like, you know, in a really... Yeah, his corpse has been sold, which is a bit much.
That was fun, wasn't it? Because somebody found the actual real Mr. Blobby costume they used on the BBC, sold it, or at least auctioned it for thousands.
81,000, yeah.
And then everyone with, like, a 10 quid blow-up Blobby costume or balloon or anything just started trying to sell them for thousands. No, it has to actually be Mr. It has to be him.
It has to be the real Blobby.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the Blobby bubbles burst.
As the sort of chronically online person who launched and co-hosts the world's longest-running retro gaming podcast, I've been on the World Wide Web since the start. Back in the old days, it was a pretty casual place, and you could keep track of the handful of websites that saved info about your visits by simply going to your cookies folder. But these days, surveillance is pretty much the internet's default mode. Even browsing incognito does nothing to protect your privacy. Companies like Google still track your behavior regardless. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible online as you were in the old days? You use ExpressVPN. On a normal internet connection, your online activity is harvested and sold to data brokers, whether you're logged in or incognito. Your computer's IP address is one of the main points they track, allowing them to uniquely identify you and your location. ExpressVPN reroutes your connection through an encrypted server and masks your IP address. So every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you're assigned a random IP address shared by many other ExpressVPN customers, which makes it harder for third parties to identify you and harvest your data. And ExpressVPN is a breeze to set up and use. Desktop systems, laptops, mobile devices, even smart TVs. So you only need to tap a single button to enjoy instant anonymity. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/retronauts and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/retronauts. Go to expressvpn.com/retronauts to learn more.
Oh, boy. Dave, how did you come to enjoy Sonic 3 and Knuckles, my dear friend?
Well, I didn't have a Mega Drive when that game came out, but I was already a big Sonic fan right from the off, you know, right from when Sonic 1 came out, just from going to friends' houses and playing it around Children's World where they had a playable copy of it there, things like that. And so by the time Sonic 3 came out, I was well and truly like an active Sonic fan. I was reading Sonic the comic. I had every issue. I had the books and, you know, just everything you could do. What, taping all the episodes of the cartoon? Everything you could do other than having a Mega Drive, I was doing. And and eventually, you know, that meant, of course, that when I did get a Mega Drive, suddenly it was a straight run of 4 brilliant games that I was able to get very quickly. But, yeah, you know, I would go around a friend's house and there was my best friend at the time had the game, and we used to really bond over that. That was really a thing that we did together, was him having Sonic 3.
it's a beautiful sort of thing to bond over, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be like, you have Sonic 3. I want to play Sonic 3.
Yes.
I will remain friends with you for the purpose of playing Sonic 3.
Perfect. And I was just round his house recently, and at least two of his four kids are into Sonic now. They were sat there.
Oh, that's a shame.
Unbidden, they were playing Sonic Mania and watching some Sonic thing. I can't remember what.
A friend of mine's niece is really into Sonic, which is wild to me because having spent all these years in the fandom, I no longer think of it as something children like.
Yeah, I know.
So whenever I see children into Sonic, I'm like, oh God, no, what's happened? And then I remember, oh no, it's okay. They actually enjoy it on the level at which it's intended to be enjoyed.
Yeah.
I remember once my dad, I think it was me and my dad walking through a shopping center while, like, I was like, you know, in my 20s at this point. And he was like, oh, look, Jamie, oh, look over there, Jamie, look, look, there's a kid wearing a Sonic shirt. And I'm like, what do you want me to do, Dad? Do you want me to just, like, walk up and say hi to him? I like Sonic too.
That reminds me of my dad. Whenever every time he'd see anything with anyone who he knows I like on it, he'll point to it and go, "Hey, look, there's your mate."
Mm. Yeah,
I love that. What a great dad thing to do, hey? So, and for me personally, weirdly enough, I don't really remember how I first encountered this game. I think it was maybe in. I mean, I knew it existed just about because I had friends with Mega Drives, but we didn't really play that much. If we were together, we would be playing something two player like Streets of Rage 2 or Mega Bomberman, and not so much Sonic. Though I did covet it because I did like Sonic because of STC and because of Adventures Sonic the Hedgehog and because of the fact that Sonic's just ace. I mean, look at him; he's great.
Look at him.
He's a good guy, isn't he? He's a good fella.
He's the best design for a character ever, and it only got better with Sonic 3.
The best design for a character ever?
Yep.
That's a controversial position.
No, it is not.
I'm afraid it is controversial because you haven't taken into account Kirby.
Oh, okay. Mm. Kirby, it's good, but... No, it's no Sonic. It's one, Kirby isn't blue. Two, Kirby hasn't got the spikes.
Kirby can be blue. He can have spikes if he collects the needle power.
Well, but that's cheating, isn't it? You might as well say a Chao is the best design then, because it can look like Sonic.
No, they're rubbish. I hate them. I hate the Chao. It saddens me that you can't mince them up in the game. It's a shame.
You should be able to.
Yeah. But I'm not sure how I came to it. I mean, I remember having a copy of the... inexplicably having a copy of the Electronic Gaming Monthly video game buyer's guide from 1995, a US magazine that I'd somehow got hold of, that had enormous multi-page spreads full of, like, beautiful Sonic 3 and Knuckles stuff, including, like, the Doomsday Zone, which was desperately exciting, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
There's that huge Dr. Robotnik, like, robot sprite flying through this asteroid field. It's just very, very cool. And, you know, eventually we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
But, I think I think the best thing to do really is just to dive in. Let's lay down a few maybe just one ground rule, which is Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles are technically separate products, but for the sake of convenience and because it's the way that the Sonic universe regards these games now. I mean, look at Sonic Origins. There's no way to play them separately in Sonic Origins, for example.
Is there not?
No, there isn't. And I think it's an oversight. But if that's how they're presenting the games as a coherent sort of timeline, unless it's very relevant, I think we should stick to considering them one thing.
If you had to choose one way or the other way, then presenting them as one game is correct. I'll agree with that. Although, for the purposes of the recording, I feel like we ought to talk a little bit about what it was like before they were one game.
I think we should talk about that very, very briefly, yes. We do need to establish where this game kind of came from.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not actually that informed on the genesis of this project, no pun intended.
Oh. I can take over there if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd like you to do it for me, Shay. This is why I got you on, because I don't want to do the research.
Okay, so far as I understand it, and keep in mind that this is from the top of my head. I haven't prepared a document on this, so there may be minor factual inaccuracies. Check the comments if there are. I'm sure they'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, from what I understand, if you have any notes about factual inaccuracies. I advise you just swivel. No, I'm joking. Just, you know, by all means, fill us in the comments. Carry on. Sorry.
It's, I believe it started out and it was supposed to be like a 3D project initially, but it was also neat. The game was intended to be developed in a single year, which is pretty tough going, but also not that unheard of, especially for the time. And it was, for a few reasons. Number one is there was a McDonald's tie-in that Sega had planned in the UK and the US at least, but also because the game was getting very large, and so the cartridge itself would cost a bomb if the whole game was to be put on it. So yeah. When it was getting closer to its February 1994 release date, they made the decision to essentially split it in half. Sonic 3, that is the first six zones, would release on its February release date. They would get the McDonald's tie-in. The cartridge would remain small, which means that people would be more likely to buy it, blah, blah, blah. And then a few months later, I believe it was October, they released Sonic and Knuckles, which is the second half of the game, the final zones, and it has this weird like hinge on the top where you can essentially shove the two cartridges together to make one mega game.
An essential part of the Tower of Power for the Mega Drive when combined with a Game Genie or 32X.
Mega Drive, Mega CD on the side, 32X, Game Genie, Sonic and Knuckles, Sonic 3 in the top.
Yeah, you can actually, yeah, you could, if you were really, like, is it possible to stack multiple Sonic and Knuckles cartridges? I don't think
it is.
Okay, well then that's a never-ending Tower of Power then. I could go to the moon.
Absolutely. There are literally no other factors preventing you from piling up Sonic and Knuckles and reaching the moon.
I wonder how many... I think I've seen before they were trying to do a test of exactly how many things you can stack up and it will still boot. But that's not for now, really. That's another thing to worry about. Maybe look it up on YouTube or something. It's probably on there. But be careful on there. There's some horrible videos on that website.
Is this like 7-hour Pokemon analysis?
Yeah. God. Imagine what kind of a sad... Uh-oh, whoops. Oh, boy. I'm tugging my collar now. Yeah. The best place, I think, to... oh, no, we haven't talked about the most important thing about this game, which is that Michael Jackson made all the music for it, every single tune.
Yep.
But this is a thing that... because I want to talk about this because I find it hilarious. Now, correct me if I'm wrong about this, because I love this. I think this is so good. For a long time, like many years, it was essentially considered that what happened was Michael Jackson made a bunch of the music for Sonic 3... Then he decided to become a paedophile, so they took the music out and replaced it for the PC release with different music, which everyone would say at the time is not as good. It very much sounds like it was just kind of slotted in there. Then a couple of years ago, I want to say.
Very recently, yeah.
A November 1993 prototype of Sonic 3 dropped at hiddenpalace.org or whatever it's called, revealing that... in fact, the music from Sonic 3 on PC is the original music, and the Michael Jackson-tinged music was what replaced it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which basically turned the entire like mystery on its head, which I love it when stuff like that happens. It was great.
And as soon as that happened, everyone started going, oh, it's actually good, isn't it?
Well, it was good, because through the Mega Drive chip, it actually does sound like good music to me.
It was just a sort of bad MIDI that they had on the PC version, wasn't it?
I'm rather fond of the prototype music. Unfortunately, when it was brought over to Sonic Origins, they kind of screwed some of it up by re-orchestrating it when they only really needed to have cleaned it up, in my opinion. But no, they decided to redo it, but make it as though it was being recorded through a toilet wall.
But for me, it's like... So far as I understand it, it's actually there was claims that Michael Jackson wasn't happy with how his music sounded through the sound chip and blah blah blah. When of course it was around the time that the allegations started coming out, and I think it's safe to say that those diplomatic reasons for his departure, there's still a lot of kind of mystery surrounding it. But from what I understand, it's like that he recorded samples. There are a lot, if you listen to a lot of the music in Sonic 3, there's a lot of kind of like Michael Jackson style vocalisms.
Yes, there are, yeah.
And he recorded them, but a lot of the actual music composition was done by his team rather than the man himself.
Yeah, Brad Buxer from the Jetsons, right?
Yeah, because Ice Cap Zone is like basically just one-to-one an unreleased single from Brad Buxer.
Yeah, Bruxer's. Hard Times. Maybe we can get that in one of the breaks on this show, because it's kind of a banger.
Oh, it is, absolutely.
Yeah.
A bit of a synth lost classic, in my opinion.
And the sort of the embarrassing thing is that kind of until we started to get a bit more grown up and more interested in really analysing things and going like, oh, listen to the nuances of this. Ice Cap Zone was pretty much de facto everyone's favourite tune from the game. And it turns out to just, yeah, it's this other guy just brought his existing recording and slapped it on the table and went, hey, I have that.
Well, this is the thing about it. It's like even the credits music for Sonic 3, which was replaced in Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Yeah.
Like apparently, I believe, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was Brad Buxer himself said that became the basis for Stranger in Moscow.
Stranger in Moscow, yeah.
I think that was Brad Buxer.
Like, and stuff like that. So like he's obviously reusing ideas in places where he thinks that's appropriate. And yeah, I can see that. For me personally, that the soundtrack it originally released with, the Brad Buxer or Michael Jackson soundtrack, is so ingrained in my head that the prototype music and the PC engine, like the prototype music and everything, I think is good. I think it's very good. But for me, it feels wrong because it's not what I've played for so long and so
often.
I'll
tell you what it feels like to me. It feels like the Sonic CD jump noise. You're like, okay, I accept that, but it's wrong.
I honestly find it remarkable how quickly they grow on me. The only one I don't like, it, funnily enough, is the Ice Cap replacement, which I think is really mediocre. But the Launch Base replacement and the Carnival Night replacement, especially, I think are much better. Like in terms of feeling
better.
that they fit. Yeah, I mean, I love those tunes, but the prototype ones fit the themes way better for me, I think.
Possibly.
I mean, like the Carnival Night one is like you've got a little bit of a carnival thing going on, but it's essentially just Jam from Dangerous. Then Launch Base, as great as it is, it's just a kind of another Michael Jackson song. So I'm a little bit like, I don't know, the replacement, which has that kind of it's very cool.
It feels more like a Flash Gordon kind of spaceship taking off kind of theme, which very much fits the aesthetic.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fond of them. I mean, I get it. I mean, they are definitely ingrained in my head, but they have grown on me. And if I'm going to play this game, the fact of the matter is I'm probably going to be playing Sonic 3 Complete these days, so I can pick and choose anyway whatever music I want to hear. Or Origins, which I'm less likely to pick up because of how bad it sucks, although it's kind of okay-ish now, I guess.
But it's only got the replacement music, hasn't it? So
it does, yeah.
It's such a shame because it is like there is so much. This is petulant fan stuff. Sorry, there is much misinformation about the old Sonic games. You know, there's so many even new Sonic fans saying they suck, and a lot of old Nintendo fans going back to them, and they do play differently. Like I totally appreciate that they are not like if you've been used to a different style of platformer your entire life, these things are slightly different. You know, I totally get all that.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, Sonic Origins comes out and it's like, okay, this is the opportunity. Like, this is front and center. Here's all the good stuff in one easy to digest package. Please pick this up, blah, blah. You know, this is it. This is where you can go. But then they come out and the physics are slightly different, they're slightly off, and there's a lot of other weird little changes and stuff. And sometimes it interferes with the way the game's actually designed. One of the things that people say is that, like, Sonic's unfair, you, like, just prang into stuff all the time and there's no way you can help it, which I think is completely untrue, except in Sonic Origins, where sometimes that is true because the physics are slightly different, so a spring will ping you too high directly into spikes.
That's the thing. It's so precisely tuned that, well, yeah, these little differences just bolster the incorrect opinions about the game.
Oh, I mean, the thing is, it's easy to get roped into, not that that's what I'm saying is happening here, but it's easy to be accused of, if you talk about game difficulty on any real level, it's easy to get told of that you're gatekeeping. And there's an extent to which that I think that does happen. My approach with Sonic is, and I know how this comes off, and I truly don't care anymore, it's kind of like, all right, so this game that has an inbuilt system to completely negate any problem with actually taking damage.
Yeah.
With one action button and a D-pad being its only inputs. this game that is like well known to be hugely popular with people who have like even severe learning difficulties. That's not me trying to be edgy. That's actually like genuinely true.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And they're telling me this game is unfair. This is the game that's too hard. That's unfair. That's like, what are you talking about? It's just drivel.
Yeah. I've never believed when I hear that, because it just sounds so much like, because I know I talk like that about stuff I'm not giving a chance. You know what I mean? When I sit down to something that isn't precisely what I like already, though, that's the kind of rot that I talk. And so when I can hear it in other people, like, no, it's not. You're just not doing it properly. Just give it a few minutes more.
Like, I know for a fact that if I'm not interested in something, I can find petulant ways to dismiss it. Like, I turned off The Last of Us 1 because it got something very slightly wrong about how bats echolocation work. And I'm like, I'm not having this. Fuck that off. The fact is I didn't want to play a zombie game because I'm a wimp. You know? But the thing, the frustrating thing to me about Sonic Origins is that, like, I'm like, Sonic 3 and Knuckles is this incredible game. To me, it is the best 2D platformer ever made. I include Mario in that. Oh, you should play it, you should play it, you should play it. Just also avoid the most readily available version.
It's the only available version. They've taken away other versions. They're all gone now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, it's frustrating.
You could download the ROM, but don't forget, listeners, if you download ROMs... You have to delete them
24 hours
is up. Otherwise, jail.
Jail. That's the fanfare that plays when you enter jail.
Anyway, we're now, I think we're in a good position to start talking about the actual zones. I'm going to assume that most people have a passing understanding of how Sonic games work, which is that, as I've mentioned, it's D-pad and one input. You have the ability to spin dash by crouching and mashing this one input, which revs you up on the floor, and when you release, you'll go flying forwards. They've also added a new thing to this game called the Instant Shield, which you can use by pressing the jump button again while you're in the air to have a split second of invulnerability. I think it's quite fallible, but it does kind of work. You can go through spikes sometimes with it and hit enemies, which is nice. Other than that, and the fact that you've got Tails there and the second player can use him to fly around and carry Sonic to places. And Knuckles, I forgot about him. And he can climb walls and glide, but otherwise is exactly the same. More or less. I think you might jump a little bit less high. Could be wrong on that one.
His jump's a little shorter.
Yeah. But more or less, you're getting a relatively equivalent experience with the three playable character combos. Well, technically four if you count Sonic. No, wait, more than that, because there's... it's just Sonic and Tails. Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there's no more. I'm thinking of Sonic Mania getting confused. They've confused me. The game should be withdrawn from sale. But also new in Sonic 3 is that this game had a battery backup, which was removed for Sonic and Knuckles, but added back in for Sonic 3 and Knuckles, I think.
Well, it wasn't added back in. It's just you're playing through the Sonic 3 cart now, so it's just there.
It was just there.
Because that's a physical, that's an actual, you have to have hardware for that. The Sonic 3 cartridge came with a little battery in it that allowed you to save. And I think that actually contributed to some people saying that Sonic 3 was a little bit throwaway, a little bit easy. Nobody of my generation, nobody around me said that, but I gather that's what some people think. But then Sonic and Knuckles comes out without save, and of course by that time, games have moved on a little bit, and I think we kind of expected to be able to save by then, so we're like, wow, this is, okay, this is, maybe this is good, I don't know. But then you figured out, oh wait, we're supposed to combine this technology.
So just to get it sort of, just so it's known before we go into the individual sort of zones, what's missing from the separate games? It's not just Doomsday, is it?
No. Doomsday is in. It's, well, number one is playable characters. Is you can't you can't play as Knuckles in Sonic 3, and you can't play as Tails in Sonic and Knuckles.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? You can't get all the Super Emeralds at all.
You can't get all. It's basically just there's some minor tweaks to the levels as well.
Right.
You're essentially getting the first half of the game with Sonic 3, the last half of the game was Sonic and Knuckles. You put them both together and you get like the whole adventure all at once. It's like something like 14, 15 zones or something.
Mm. Yeah.
All of them massive. Like each individual level is so much larger than any of the... It's like three times larger than the ones from Sonic 1 and 2.
Yeah.
It's huge game for a 2D platformer. And you get to play as all the characters, and you get little bonuses here and there, and you get the Super Emeralds, which allows you to unlock even better supersonic.
Yeah, hypersonic. I think we can. I don't think spoilers matter at this point.
But
just to lay it out, just in case you're not familiar, you collect these Chaos Emeralds. They're the main gimmick item of all of the Sonic games, more or less. To get them, you have to find a giant ring. Get in it, play a bonus game, and if you win the bonus game, you get an emerald. Then in the second half of the game, if you've managed to get all of them, you do it again with these super emeralds, which then allow you to become hypersonic or hyper knuckles or super tails. Tails gets the short end of the stick to some extent. It doesn't get to be two forms, just one. And it's also a bit lame because all it is just tails, except there's some birds flying around him.
Yes, but the birds are homing missiles that kill everything. That's quite cool.
That is true. That is quite cool. I wonder if that wasn't how they inspired cream and cheese from Sonic Advance 2.
Probably.
Questions to pose to convicted criminal Yuji Naka at some point, maybe.
If we ever bump into him in jail. Also, if anyone listening doesn't...
I wonder if he heard that jingle when he got in.
Also, anyone listening who doesn't know, the context here is that we didn't know about this at the time. Like, we didn't... When we played Sonic 3, none of us knew it was only the first half of anything. Like, I don't remember that even being out as a slight rumour.
I think it was in magazines along those lines that they've had... I'm sure I have a magazine from the era where it says about them having to have cut the game in half.
Oh, right, okay. Well, generally speaking, they were trying to keep that under wraps. And Sonic and Knuckles, when that came out, now we knew that it had this lock-on technology. But my memory of it is that the identity of Sonic 3 when it came out was this, you know, whoosh, bang, bells and whistles. You know, yeah. You loved Sonic, you loved Sonic 2, here's another one, the natural progression. Sonic and Knuckles, when that came out, there was this sense of like, oh, it's very similar to Sonic 3, isn't it? And like, we knew about lock-on technology, but the only way that it was ever explained to us what Sonic 3 and Knuckles was, you know, you'd have a little blurb on the back of the box that would be like, or connect them together for a big adventure or something. And you just sort of, I remember my eyes just kind of glazing over that and not really taking it for anything other than a bit of marketing spin. So when you did actually plug it in and figure out how rich an experience this is and how you really are unlocking a much better version of the thing you've got, it really was tremendously exciting.
I mean, you've raised an interesting point there for me, which is that I, as a youngster, what Sonic and Knuckles was it was the device by which you could play as Knuckles in Sonic 2.
Yes, that was way more famous than knowing about Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Play as Knuckles in Sonic 2, you can climb up to the top of the structure in Chemical Plant and find four 1-ups up there.
Yeah.
Which is wild and mad, because you're thinking, oh my god, how have I overlooked these this whole time? But of course, in reality, I'm reasonably sure they weren't actually there.
No, I don't believe they were. I mean,
unless you're Knuckles, because there's no way for him to get them. I mean, feel free, Sonic fans, to tell me I'm wrong.
No, I think that's right. And there'd be no way to get up there anyway. You have to be Knuckles and you have to climb the thing. And I think I know this. When you play as
Right.
The way a Mega Drive works, everyone, is you got a slot of pins in the Mega Drive, and the inside of a cartridge is a board, and it slots into it, and that's how the game connects. Sonic and Knuckles, you unhooked the top, and you had a slot of pins, like in the Mega Drive, so that's how you can put Sonic 3 in. Sonic, I believe Sonic and Knuckles, if you put Sonic 2 in that, and you play as Knuckles in Sonic 2, you're not. You're not doing what you think you're doing. You're not just playing, like, you're playing Sonic 2, but it's put this Knuckles sprite on. As I understand it, there's a copy of Sonic 2 in the Sonic and Knuckles cartridge. Or at least it doesn't have any of the graphics, but it's got the code. It's got the ROM just without any of the assets. That, I think, is how it works. So it's pulling the music and graphics out of the cartridge, but the game map is in the Sonic and Knuckles cartridge. Maybe even in a separate little chip that they've put in there specially. And that is why they could slightly redesign certain bits. And that's the only one I know about, is that one bit in Chemical Plant. I don't know if there was any more at all.
I'm incredulous about this. I can't believe it, those crooks.
That's what I heard. I don't know.
They got me again.
Yeah. It's all just tricks, isn't it? It's all trickery gaming. They're not even real people running about in there. It's all just make-believe.
But this is maybe me worrying a bit too much. But again, I need to stress for modern listeners is I don't feel hard done by. I don't feel like I don't feel like they swindled us by splitting the game into two. Because no. I feel Sonic 3 by itself is so robust. Like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there is a remarkable quantity and quality to the content just in half of this game. This game, like, yes. Look, I love this game. This is one of my favourite games ever made. There is a remarkable quality and quantity of it in just half of this game.
Yeah.
Half of this game is enough to be an exemplary, like, Mega Drive game on its own. Literally.
And that's why I wanted to make sure that that we'd put that across, because I think people just don't talk about that anymore, because we know that the real game is when you connect them together. But when you had Sonic 3, it was enough. And then when you had Sonic and Knuckles, the excitement of that, I think, is lost a little bit with playing it as just as one game. Because what it was that in Sonic 3, you had this new character who was a villain, Knuckles, who you only saw and didn't play as, and you just saw him now and then between levels. And then the new one comes out, and it's Sonic and Knuckles. And it was like, never mind Tails. Do you remember Tails from Sonic 2? Sweet little... isn't a sweet little game. You guys, now you got this brawler.
You remember Tails? Well, he's dead. he's gone forever.
Knuckles has killed him. Well, there was a feeling of, like, now that we're older, we've played with the fuzzy little sweet fox, now we get to play with this fighter. And it was really, really exciting to be able to play as Knuckles.
Yeah.
And it just feels normal.
And also, Barrett, and I mean, that's what we were saying about not feeling swindled, because, I mean, I see that. I mean, all I remember thinking is, nice, more Sonic, my favourite thing. There's more of it. And look at that logo. That's the single coolest image that's ever been produced.
Oh my God.
Genuinely, I think I've said this on my podcast. It is one of two things I would ever... I don't have any tattoos, and if I did, it would be that. And one other thing that's so personal, I'm not telling you.
You can't have tattoos, Dave. Tattoos are for tough kids.
I know, exactly. And I would be one if I had a Sonic and Knuckles logo on me. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that's true. I would be scared. I'd be fit to confront you if you did.
But that is because it is one of the best designs anyone's ever done of anything. It's amazing. So, the Sonic series has that logo and Sonic the Hedgehog in it. Amazing!
What I love about that is how much it stands out on a shelf, because it's like all the rest of them have like painted art, beautiful painted art, trying to convey what is in the game, the kind of things you will be doing, the characters and all that. This is just a logo that is like just a silhouette of Sonic's head and a silhouette of Knuckles' head in red next to it.
It knows you don't need any more, because you know who Sonic is, and this is like, oh, right, here's Sonic and Knuckles. It's what it's a bit like, and actually, I think on our podcast we realised maybe this is what they were riffing on. It's rather like the Batman movie poster, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is that same oval shape with the Batman logo in it on black, because the statement being made was, you know what this is. You've grown up with various versions of Batman. Well, check it out. Batman. And that's what this was.
Yeah. Hey, kids, get a load of this. Batman.
Yeah.
I don't know why I find that funny.
Get a load of this. Batman.
Ian, mate, is that a Sonic reference?
No Sonic references in the Sonic episodes.
Sorry.
I mean, is there more to say before we dive sort of headlong in? Because I feel like we've covered all of the important sort of contextual stuff now.
Slam it in, turn it on.
Yeah. Like, all right, well, let's get locked
in. Together with the readers, we've just endured the long drive home from the shop. We've been reading through the manual feverishly in the car. Mum insists on stopping at Sainsbury's and doing a long shop, but we're finally home.
Mega Drive's
on. It's a little while till tea. On it goes.
Or if you're me, you're in the shop and you're going, can I have a Mega Drive? And you're going, no.
Yeah.
But, of course, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, first thing you see when you turn this on outside of the Sega logo is just a percussion assault and a 3D Sonic like mashing his way out from the screen. Like, although the Percussion Assault is just with three, isn't it? Because they changed it to the for Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Yeah. So depending on which one you're playing, if you're playing Sonic 3 alone, you're getting. But if you're playing Sonic 3 and Knuckles, you're getting. I feel like it's important we make that clear.
Yeah. Bear that in mind throughout the whole of the rest of the discussion, everyone.
I think the rest of this podcast, we should make all the sound effects. So you collect a ring and it goes bling. Yeah.
Diddling.
Sorry, I'll stop.
Boing.
Was that the spring?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad, although I think they're a little bit deeper than that.
Boing.
Perfect. ignoring the select screen, which is straight out of Sonic 3, you're thrust into a what people have recently, to my absolute teeth-grinding annoyance, despite the fact that it is accurate, have started calling a cold open.
Oh, God.
I mean, it is. It is a cold open.
I
but
guess.
You're not in Los Angeles, my friends.
What do they mean by cold open? Well, it doesn't start with a long explanation of the background story.
Well, what used to be a cold opening...
Ning...
is prior to the title card of the first zone appearing, there is a sequence.
Oh, so it's the open you're objected to, not the cold.
But it's a cold opening. The game starts with
begins.
Sonic, in his regular form, I believe, flying down, standing on the wings of Tails' biplane, the Tornado. I don't think it's been named that at this point, though. Flying across the lush waters of the outskirts of Angel Island, wherein he leaps off the plane, shockingly, has me screaming, "No, Sonic, no, you're going to die." But as he falls off the screen, he runs back on, magically running on the water, but not so much running, but doing his supersonic flying thing that he does, because he is, in fact, supersonic. Now, this establishes something which has never been seen in the Sonic series up to this point, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to say the C word, continuity.
Mm.
Because the implication here is that this is directly following on from the ending of Sonic 2, right?
That's what people take it as, yeah.
Is that the implication?
I mean, I'm happy for it to take place any time after that. But, but yeah, sure. Well, what it is, God, I've not thought of this for about 30 years. But what it is it's incredibly exciting, isn't it? Because Sonic 2, if you ever saw Super Sonic at all, it was because, and it wasn't because you put the cheat in, which is how I saw it. It was because you'd worked really hard, played through the game, and then been surprised by this burst of incredible power at the end. Sonic 3 just goes, check this out, kids. Bang! There he is straight away. It was so exciting.
Yeah. Well, because Super Sonic was so... not forbidden, but I was never going to unlock Super Sonic in Sonic 2, and I don't think I ever have to this day, because I hate the special stages so much.
I must have done, but it wasn't a regular occurrence.
But now there he is, bold as brass.
Yeah.
Running through Angel Island, whereupon... he runs into our dear friend Knuckles the Echidna, who twats him.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
What an incredible intro for like the new rival character. This isn't just Sonic. This is like Sonic at the peak of his power. This is Super Sonic. Yeah. And he just takes... Knuckles just takes him out instantly.
Yeah, he's just like, nah.
Knuckles blasts out of the ground with his fist up, smacks into Super Sonic, and he punches the Chaos Emeralds out of him. And they scatter on the floor, and they're perfect little, beautiful little rainbow-coloured little jewels on the floor. They're lovely to look at. I love them so dearly.
And then he nicks them.
Yeah. And then he goes, ah, ha, ha, and he runs off.
Like, he mugs Sonic. Like, that's such an impact, and it creates such a friction with that character, because it is like... oh, you're at the peak of your power. You have just been humiliated. He's laughed at you. He's laughed in your face. And then
Might
he's nicked
I
your
add,
shit.
He laughed in his face in front of Tails.
Doubly and, embarrassing.
And if you're just playing as Sonic alone, I don't think that he does do it in front of Tails, does he?
Well, no, because you're playing as Sonic alone.
Yeah, so this is important. He only ever does this in front of Tails as a pointed mockery in order to shake the young fox's faith in his...
I'm going to absolutely bam you up here. I don't think that happened. Because doesn't Tails come in, fly down afterwards when the Angel Island title card appears?
Oh, you're right.
Well, yeah, because he was up in a tree watching the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's why in Sonic Adventure, like, Tails' whole arc is about him getting over that trauma and going to therapy.
Yeah.
He's seen his hero, like, humiliated.
Yeah, so at this point you're thinking, for the first time ever in a Sonic game, right, I've got a motivation.
Mm.
Because previously the Sonic games, you press start and you're just standing there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I guess I'll go right then. In this, you're like, I'm going to go right, and when I go right, I'm going to kill that guy.
Yeah, no, you're right there. The implication... See, we've played this game so many times that there are certain things that we don't notice anymore. Like, to me, I don't notice Super Sonic there, and I don't go, oh, cool, but I did originally. And this one is like, oh, we'd better catch up with him. You know, we know that you can't catch up with him, but that's what the game is inviting you to try and do, isn't it?
Mm.
Get after him. He's gone that way, you go that way, get those Chaos Emeralds back. So you run. You want to run.
To put it in terms the internet can understand, Sonic 1 and 2 are hold right to win, and Sonic 3 is hold right to kill. but no, you do go right, and this is, we're in Angel Island Zone now. This is the first zone of the game. We're not going to run through the whole game step by step, but it's important to get this first bit done, I think. This is the most important part of the game. And immediately, it's different.
Yes.
Immediately, everything feels, I think, bigger. But at the same time, more composed. Like, it doesn't feel slapdash. It feels very precisely designed. Like, at the very beginning, there's almost immediately, there's a quite easy to find secret route up to the top left that I believe gets you some speed shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah.
And it's sort of unlike any other Sonic game already in that respect, because... while Sonic games do have their sort of secrets, they don't have much in the way of just specific ones. Does that even make sense? You're more likely to stumble across them than you are to have to pointedly find them, and in this game that's not true.
Yes, like, the thing that sets this game head and shoulders above its forebears and the competition, in my eyes, is the context and the storytelling. Like, That intro cutscene, that's passé now, you know? Every game has an intro cutscene. But at the time, that was pretty remarkable. And what it does is it establishes characters and it establishes a setting as well. And you take off, and there's little nooks and crannies. Like, not only is the whole game bigger, like, literally the zones are taller and wider than they were before. Not only that, but they are also better considered. There's also more stuff. Because, like, that speed shoes, if you run straight to the right after collecting the speed shoes at the top left, you land pretty specifically on a platform that allows you to keep going right.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. And, like, that storytelling, that silent storytelling, like, while you're still in the game, while you're still holding the pad, while the view is still the same, that silent storytelling carries on. Because, like... you're chasing down Knuckles and you're rushing through this lush, verdant forest.
Yeah.
And that's when this orb shows up and everything changes.
Yeah.
And it's like this metallic orb comes down from the sky and it starts shooting fire and shooting napalm grenades everywhere. And you're trying to bash it. You're trying to, like, destroy it before it can presumably destroy you. But what actually happens is, like, while you're in full control, the whole island just goes, like, boof, like an emo's hairdo. It just goes up. It's incredible. It is an incredible bit of storytelling, because the whole mood of the level shifts. This is no longer, like, a tropical paradise with ancient mysteries where you're trying to track down this guy who has wronged you. This is now, oh no... it is a race for survival as well on top of that. Like, what an impactful intro. Like, it really just gets you out there and gets you pumped up to move.
It might be worth noting as well, when the, air quotes, mini-boss comes down, this napalm tank thing, you have what appear to be dozens of others going by in the background.
Yeah!
Shooting off bombs as well. But also, the game's kind of... put you on the back foot, because you've never faced an enemy in a Sonic game prior to this that wasn't a State of Robotnik boss that took this many hits.
Yes.
Like, unless I'm wrong there, apart from the Silver Sonic, or Mecha Sonic, or whatever he's called, I think that up to this point, every time you fought a boss, it had been Robotnik.
Yeah, it's quite unprecedented to have to have something without him in it show up.
Not only is this not visibly Robotnik, but also it's not actually the mid-boss.
Yeah.
It's a scene. It's another cutscene, which is just like laying it out right there. It's just like, yeah, kids, this game's got a story that you don't just read about in the manual.
It's amazing. Dude, to this day, I still forget that it's not the mini-boss. I always start attacking it and going like, oh, I got to get this. Even though I know exactly what happens. And, and the fact that it doesn't sound like much, does it? But at the time, the fact that you walk into that encounter in one, whatever the word, not tile set, but in one design for the background for the level.
Yeah.
And you walk out with another one. For the rest of the level, it's on fire. That's what it's like from then on. That I'd never seen that before. It's not like it was this impossible leap forward in tech or anything, but I'd never seen it before.
Well, but this also, sorry, Shane, let me talk over you, but this also isn't the transition between Act 1 and Act 2.
No.
This just happens. Like, this is just...
This is what I was going to say, is that I believe there's some jiggery-pokery in the code that means that this is kind of the transition between Act 1 and Act 2. It's not... You still have to get to the end of the level and destroy one of these things to end the act. But I think in the code, as far as the code is concerned, that is the transition, and that's how it's able to completely alter the background tile set. And the reason I think that is because if you enter a special stage after this point and exit it, the music switches to Act 2.
Yes, it does.
That's why that happens!
this is going to be maybe a little bit of a laboured comparison, but please bear with me. For me, if you were to ask me, like, I've not seen many films, I'm not a big film buff, right? But if you were to ask me what my favourite film is, it's the first Star Wars. It's A New Hope. And the reason for that, for me personally, is, like, beyond just the incredible spectacle, the really nice, like the visual design of it, which Sonic 3 also has, ignoring further similarities, of course. Beyond that, it's the pacing of it. It's not a complicated story by any stretch of the imagination, but it takes its time to kind of like establish threats and to pull you in. And to me, that is Sonic 3's major strength, is it is not a complicated story at all. It is told very clearly and very simply just through, like, these silent characters kind of miming and chuckling away. but it is just the pacing of that entire first bit is so perfectly designed to just draw you in. You now have, like, a threat that you are now chasing down a threat, this other Joker who has knocked you out and stolen your stuff. But also you are kind of being chased from behind, and you also have like a bigger picture threat, which is Dr. Robotnik, who has now just set light to a massive jungle.
He's obviously got command of some greater force now, because the fact that all of those things went by in the background.
Yes.
You know, before he used to have to come out himself. Now he can send drones, so he's more powerful than before.
Exactly. So it's this incredible, it sets up so much, so efficiently, while also pacing it perfectly to give you time to adjust to each new, revelation, as it were. Hmm. Revelation seems a bit strong. Each new, introduction of a new threat, it is fantastic. It gets me every time. Angel Island is like this tour de force of storytelling, and it is of silent storytelling in video games, and it's not even the best zone in the game for it. Not even close.
No, it's not. No, I mean, we'll get to it. I think we all know what it is, but we'll get to it. The switch between on fire or not on fire and on fire, when you think about it, you spend a remarkably small amount of time in the initial stage. Enough for it to become familiar enough that it is a kind of a violation when it gets burned.
Yeah.
I think. But then from that point on, as well as the fact that the leaves have all been burnt, you start going through hollowed out trees.
Yeah.
Like there's something, you get the impression, like, not just that it's been burned, but that there's some kind of, something's going down. Like this place has been gutted, like from its former self, rather than just, set fire. It's almost like he's completely deforested it and then set it on fire just to make sure no one else can have it. In a sense, that's all in the head, you know. That's all just kind of like what you gather from it.
And we've already been introduced to how it's so dense. It feels like it's such a. Do you know what? Something I always appreciate is that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong about any of this. This is going back a while because, like you, I don't play Sonic 1 and 2 as much as I do in Sonic 3, but Sonic 1 introduced the whole, like, speed aspect by giving you a loop. And you went round it, and you went, wow, cool, that was interesting. And then Sonic 2, I think the first loop in Sonic 2 is quickly followed by a second loop. So you're like, wait, two of them! It's like Sonic 2, loop, loop, brilliant, even faster. And, you know, it's for you to test your rev up that you have now, and you can go, wait, wait, over two. Sonic 3, the first loop that you... Actually, there's two options for the first loop you can find, and that's just how good of a game it is. It's got different paths. But generally speaking, the one that I find myself going in the most, it's sort of underground. It's like built into, there's like a cave ceiling up just above it. And it kind of, and that just adds to this feeling of denseness. There are so many levels and layers to everything in this.
The escalation is you've got two loops followed by, you run around the inside of a tree.
Tree, yeah.
And it shows you it in cross-section.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a completely new gimmick that they've never used before, and they never use again.
As you run up it, and you look to the left, you see the extra life that you missed, and now you can't get back for it.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can go back for it, actually, but still.
Like, sorry if I'm jumping around a little here. It's
that's all right. Sonic does it all the time.
Yeah.
Nice. It's the thing about Sonic's brand of platforming to me that this is why it irritates me so much, the whole hold right to win narrative.
Oh my God.
Do you know why it annoys me the most? It's because you guys aren't having fun with it when you do that.
I know.
the thing that gets me about Sonic's brand of platforming, right, is that you're playing Super Mario, right? You come to a big wide pit. In order to clear that pit, you need to run. You need to get a running start to have the momentum to get the height and the distance to clear that pit, right? Very simple, like the most basic thing about platformers, right? You guys get it. Sonic is that principle taken to an extreme. It is because you can get so much faster, because there are so many more variables to how fast you can go. You can make jumps of incredibly diverse lengths and distances that can also be influenced by the terrain. If you jump off an upward ramp, you get mad high. You go incredibly high. You go ridiculously high. And the thing that Sonic 3's strength, like, the levels aren't just bigger and that's good because bigger levels are good, although that is true. They are also bigger and that is good because it allows you to use more of your speed to explore more of the level. By like modulating your speed, you can get to loads of different paths, and they're not just like little closets or nooks and crannies. Like, oh, you go down there, you find an extra life, oh, that's pretty cool, then you walk back out. It's like entire new tunnel networks that you can find. Like, I'm still finding new things in that game to this day. And it works perfectly, hand in hand, perfect synergy between Sonic's mechanics and the level design. Like, I need you to understand, it's no just bigger, it is better in such a well-developed and considered way. This was like an innovative, hungry team competing with Nintendo, now at the top of their bloody game. And it is a remarkable game through and through, because it maintains that quality pretty much throughout.
I mean, all I would add, and it's just more or less repeating what you've said, Shay, I find this game feels not only, as you say, the most expansive of the Sonic games, but it also feels the most bespoke in terms of every route has been crafted by someone. It feels handmade.
Yeah.
There's none of Sonic, and I'm not crapping on Sonic 2 because I think it's excellent, right? But You tell me the ultimate difference between any of the routes in, like, Emerald Hill, really. Like, there's the underground one where you have the same obstacles come up a couple of times. And then there's the aerial one where you go across the Mobius strips or land on moving platforms that don't really go anywhere. That's not a slight. I love that game, but it just does not compare to Sonic 3 and Knuckles, where there are new things to see and experience no matter where you go. And this is the least complex level in the game.
Like, the thing is, Dave said to me, like, the loop that he usually goes through first, I picture it exactly. I have that in my, I know exactly where he is. He doesn't need to elaborate on that for me. Mm. And the thing is, it's like, exactly like you say, Stu, we're no crapping in Sonic 2. We're not saying, oh, Sonic 2's, this is why Sonic 3 is amazing and Sonic 2 is shite. Because Sonic 3 only got where it was by standing on the shoulders of Sonic 2, you know? It's like absolute nothing but love and respect for Sonic 2. It's like Sonic 3 stands on the shoulders of giants. It's just that Sonic 2 is excellent. Sonic 3 is legendary for me.
Yeah. Sonic 3 doesn't feel like it's lost anything of what it was when it first came out. You know, you can sort of revisit older games and go like, oh, okay, well, like Sonic 2, for example. Like, you know, when I first played that, it was Christmas Day and I couldn't have possibly been happier. Whereas now, yeah, I will go like, oh, perhaps these platforms don't really get me anywhere meaningful. Perhaps this... Sonic 3, it's just as good as it ever was. And wherever you are, I mean, just taking the Angel Island Zone, wherever you go, and there's loads of places you can go, none of them feel like the wrong way. You never go like, oh, I've gone this way. It's all really great.
In Angel Island, there's something else I want to highlight, which is the secrets. And that's a difference, again, between, say, Sonic 2 and this. In Sonic 2, now this is a slight generalization, but in Sonic 2, if you find a secret, it's because you've gone through a false wall.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with that. I love false walls. I would marry them if I could.
Hell yeah.
In Sonic 3, let me have a think. Now, Angel Island Act 1 has a rock you can push aside, break through the floor, and drop down to find two ring televisions and an invincibility monitor. It also has a section where you can bounce up really high, and on first bounce, it seems like nothing, but if you bounce again, you'll notice that a waterfall is cascading logs down it that you can then land on, and if you climb to the very top of those logs, you will find an extra life. It is the kind of secret that requires lateral thinking. In fact, come to think of it, the first super ring that you find requires you to break through a wall, which is not something that has ever happened before in Sonic.
Mm.
And the way the level design suggests that as well, with the springs to the right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a thing of beauty.
It's just, what a way to make you, as well, what a way to make you in Spin Dash form feel like a force of nature, you know? Just smashing through huge rock walls, that's how powerful you are.
And the fact that they are rocks as well, like, there is a visual indicator not just that you can destroy them, but also of what they are. Unlike the ones in Green Hill Zone, which just kind of, like, it's just a normal bit of wall that kind of falls away. It's very video gamey.
Prior to that, you've had those small grey rocks that you jump on and they break, and then when you see those, you might think, hey, grey rocks, maybe I can break them, but I can't jump on them because they're kind of horizontal. Hang on a minute, I can go horizontally while in ball form by doing this. It's completely intuitive. You know, when I first played this game, having never played it before in my life, I did that because it's intuitive.
Talking about it now,
Sonic 3 and Knuckles a good game?
Absolutely amazing. I'm slightly annoyed that we're doing this, so I can't go and play it.
I'm struck anew by just how magnificent it is. The other thing is, like, I keep finding new things with the guy, things that you're saying and that I'm saying. It's like, my God, I forgot to mention this. Like, the context is stronger because those are like actual rocks. You know, they look like distinct from the rest of the wall. And like Stu says, they have been highlighted before with rocks, other grey rocks you can break. The thing about that is that context, like that stronger context is fantastic in and of itself, but it wouldn't be nearly as good were the graphics not absolutely beautiful. Like,
oh, God. Mm-hmm. We've not even mentioned it, yeah.
Gorgeous is that game. So there, when the whole forest gets set on fire, there are heat wave effects. And that's not something they could have done in engine or anything. Keep in mind, this was a sprite-based game. They would have had to have I manually illustrated and animated those heatwave effects, and that's what they, like, it would have been a huge amount of work for the artists to do that, and they considered that important enough to do.
Yeah. Got speaking of not just visual gimmicks, which gimmicks always sounds bad, but I just mean it in this traditional, you know, stuff. It's not meant to be bad. But you've got zip lines. You've got zip lines that are on fire and break in the middle of them, which is a hilarious gag.
It's so good.
Yeah, you've got your loops. You've got your pushable breakable rocks. You've got the sections where you push switches to open up ancient ruins to create even more intrigue. You've got that bit where you climb up what is pretty much a tree that doesn't appear anywhere else. They just made a special tree for you to climb. Later in the zone, you've got the bits where the waterfalls are cascading across platforms that are only briefly visible.
Yeah.
You've got the collapsing bridges. You've got, God, what else have you got? Oh, I know a good one. You've got your elemental shields that we've neglected to mention so far.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, the elemental shields.
Not only do you get your fire shield, which lets you do an enormous boost forwards by pressing the B button in the air, or any of the buttons, because they're all the same. You've got the water shield, which forms a bubble around you that lets you bounce and also breathe underwater indefinitely as long as you have it.
That's so clever, isn't it? Because that's to stop you from drowning, which everyone hates doing in Sonic. Nobody likes drowning in Sonic.
But again, it's also completely intuitive. You just think, oh, I've got the, of course, I've got the electric, I've got the lightning, sorry, God, I said it again. I've got the bubble shield, so I'm now, I have a permanent bubble. You know, you've associated bubbles with that already.
That's what you get to stop drowning. But also, while you're outside, which in the first one you get in Angel Island Zone, you get it near some quite shallow water.
Yeah.
And so you're immediately both in and out of water. And you find out straight away that by pressing the button again in the air, you do a big boing.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool, useful thing, whether there's any water around or not.
Another part that is very smart teaching, in my opinion, is the bit where the stage just dumps you in some shallow water, and if you've got one of the shields, you lose it, because that teaches you have a fire shield, it will...
It goes out in water.
Yeah, because of course it does. It's made of fire. And of course there's so many fiery obstacles in that stage that you're learning again that you can't be harmed by fire, because you have a fire shield.
While we're at it, perhaps we did mention it, but I don't think we did, the lightning shield will draw rings towards you.
And you can double jump with it as well.
Yeah, and you can double... Yeah, God! Do you know what? I'd forgotten that, because it's so normal to me that I just know these things in my head. And
it makes a good noise when you do it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you jump in the water with the lightning shield, doesn't it kill anything on the screen?
Well, it might kill anything in the water.
Doesn't it discharge into the water and kill the bad things? I'm fairly sure it does.
I don't remember that.
It's ringing a bell. It's ringing a bell. I think you mean
it's quite a rare thing to happen, but it does. I'm pretty sure it does do that. They thought of that.
That would be really cool if it did.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it does.
Because I think the balancing between them is extraordinary as well. Because, like, oh God, I think the balancing in this Sonic game is very good. What a wanker.
Well, it is.
It is. All right. Because the thing is that, like, they each protect from one elemental hazard. The water shield, of course, prevents you from drowning, which is remarkably useful throughout Sonic 3. The fire shield protects you from any fire-based attacks, which is remarkably useful against all of the bosses who, being Robotnik robots, have boosters. So, like, it's supposed to be you can't quite hit them because they've got these, like, fire boosters, so you can't hit them in that spot, but you can with the fire shield because you're immune to it. Then you have the lightning barrier, which protects against electricity, which is a very, very rare obstacle. So as an added bonus, it magnetizes the rings so you don't have to run into them to collect them, which also makes perfect sense. It's...
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Might be worth noting, we'd get to it eventually anyway, but the lightning shield comes into its own very, very late in the Death Egg Zone when there's a lot of places you can traverse with it.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't be able... That you'd have to really painstakingly platform over otherwise. I do like the fact that the game is not especially concerned with being difficult. I mean, that's true of all of the Sonic games, but... Well, at least the ones so far. But in here, they're just kind of like, hey, what the hell, have fun. It's a, you know, yeah. There's so much to see. You're going to be playing these levels again anyway because you've missed loads of stuff. And something we haven't mentioned, of course, is the alternate routes depending on who you're playing as. Or the alternate ways of traversing the stages, which means that, Knuckles in Act 2, I want to say, has a pretty different act.
Yeah, like, listeners, we need you to understand that, like, like, we keep covering a bit of this, and then I'm realizing, oh, no, wait, actually, we've got to multiply that by 3. It's not quite multiply that by 3, but it is like, you will find, there is a bit towards the end of Angel Island Act 1, where there is a stone wall that you can't break as Sonic. And it's like, okay, what's that there for? You know, like, literally can't get past it. Oh, it just must be a weird detail.
Didn't we wonder for months what that was? Didn't we try stuff wondering what it was?
Yeah. The first time I played it was in Sonic Mega Collection, so, like, which had a really bizarre way of, like, unlocking Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Hold on. I think the word you're looking for there is actually shit way of unlocking, yeah.
Fair enough, yeah. Because you had to play Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles like 20 times each, so you could just boot up, quit out another 18 times and you would unlock Sonic 3 and Knuckles. It's ridiculous. But once you unlock Knuckles in Sonic 3, all of a sudden, of course, because he's like this wrecking ball, he's this really strong, destructive guy, and he just runs straight through them with his fists out.
Yep.
And you get another bit of the level, which takes you into a completely unique act too.
Yes. And by the way, Stu, in the time since you said it, I have fired up Angel Island, and yes, with the electric shield, if you go in the water, Badniks in the water explode. Correct.
Attention to detail.
Yep.
Now, I also want to mention that in Angel Island, one of the acts, I think two, there is in fact a little bit that only Tails can access as well.
Yeah.
Where you fly up between, I want to say, two walls of sort of perpendicular walls of spikes.
Yeah.
It's not a huge amount, but it's there. And it's there, so if you're playing as Tails or you have Tails and you think, I want to carry Sonic up there, they thought of that too.
Yeah.
So what they've done.
Well, that's new. Tails couldn't carry Sonic before. Now he can. So now you can fly.
He could fly before, but not under your control, only when the computer was playing as him. And he wasn't able to carry you either.
Yeah, so if you've got a second controller, you can fly, and a younger brother to play as Tails, you can fly Sonic up to different places. Brilliant!
Now, what they've done here is they've created, I don't know if it is exactly 14, but let's say 14 large, unique stages that each work in 3 different movesets without really compromising.
No.
That's quite impressive, don't you think?
It's so impressive that I've never really thought about it like that before, because it just feels normal. When you play it, you play as Knuckles, you don't feel like, oh, I can't do this because I'm Knuckles, or I can't get there. Like, you feel powerful, whoever you are.
If they're ever going to get a chance to say absolutely mad things on a podcast, it's going to be this one. So, correct me if you think I'm wrong, or at least barking up the wrong sort of tree here. But do you think that in any way came out of Sonic CD having multiple different types of each stage?
Oh.
Because if you think about it, having alternate routes through the different stages is sort of for Sonic, or at least for different types of stages, if you think about it, they kind of merged the 3 stages into just one, but had 3 different ways to move through it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I wonder if there's a lineage there in terms of how can we bring this concept into the upcoming game without it being quite so, I guess, alienating.
Well, it's certainly a continuity of thinking, isn't it? Especially since a lot of that stuff was going to be in Sonic 2, wasn't it? Before they realised they couldn't.
I think that there's a lot of speculation about that. I'm not sure what the actual truth is, though.
No. Well, the story goes that after Sonic 1... Sonic Team essentially split into two. There was the one that was there was the group that stayed in Japan under the supervision of, I believe it was Naoto Oshima, the art guy who designed Sonic in the first place, and they went on to make Sonic CD, and it was the main group under Yuji Naka,
convicted criminal.
Him and a lot of other Japanese staff, he was feeling very dissatisfied with his position at Sega in Japan. So he went across to America and he got, like, he basically got his own team filled with Japanese staff in America at the STI, which of course stands for sexually transmitted infection.
Yeah. Infection, yeah.
This, I can't resist, sorry, the Sega Technical Institute. And they went on to create Sonic 2 and then off the back of that, Sonic 3.
Yeah.
So if there was like a lineage there, it would have been, I think, that the American staff would have been inspired by Sonic 3D, inspired by Sonic CD, rather than it being a direct continuation of what they're trying to do. If that makes sense.
Right, right. Just floating the idea, really. I should probably say at this point that I think Yuji Naka might actually not have been convicted, so I feel like I should say, I take it back, he is not a convicted criminal. And the worst thing is, I've had to make the same apology on a previous episode.
Oh, he's been formally indicted. Is that convicted?
Formally indicted Yuji Naka?
Yeah. Formally indicted for insider trading offences.
Indicts into dreams. Is that a thing? sort of into dreams, so into nightmares is what I was thinking. So, yeah. Oh, dear.
More like nights into prison.
Let's chill. What else there is to say about Angel Island? I mean, there is obviously plenty. We haven't even talked about the boss yet, so I guess we should talk about the boss.
Go on, then.
Prior to the boss, now I'm going to be controversial now. Prior to the boss is the only part of the level which I wish wasn't there when I replay it, and it's only about 10 seconds long.
Which bit's that? Is that the wiggly bit?
You know, it's the bit where you get chased by flying battery.
Yeah,
I think it's a flying battery. Right. Now,
I like that.
I like it a lot. It's really cool, but on replays, I would like to be able to just skip it because all you do is hold right to win.
Yeah.
You know what's really annoying is in Sonic Origins, they messed it up, so you have to actually dodge the bombs.
Oh, no!
Well, it's like the first time through, it's this really cool set piece that also foreshadows one of the later levels in the game. It's literally Sonic running down this big straight path, being bombed. By,
carpet bombed, yeah.
Yeah, being while this enormous flying machine.
And it goes.
Oh, yeah, blows your speakers out. And it's dropping bombs behind them. And all you need to do to outrun it is literally just hold right.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's really, really
cool. Just watch Tails die over and over and over.
Yeah, I love that part.
Yeah.
By the way, shout out to whoever animated the explosion that comes off those bombs landing. It's one of the best I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, like, and then while you're still at full tilt, the flying battery goes away, you're still going at full tilt, you're still pegging it because you're like, oh, Jesus, what if it comes back? And that's when you see through the trees in the background.
It's so good.
Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah.
And then not only that, and then you don't just like get to the boss arena and then he just flies in after you. He bursts out through the waterfall behind you.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and then he quite literally burns bridges.
Yes.
Oh.
It's well good, that
whole
bit.
And then you die immediately if you're me because you're trying to be fancy.
Because you've got your fire shield, so you try and zoosh forward.
If you've got a fire shield, if you're very good, you can jump at just the right time and hit him four times and then fire shield to the other side again.
And
it's really fun to do.
If you time it perfectly, you can actually get all 8 hits in there, and then the boss ends before it's even begun.
That's amazing.
It is the bosses in Sonic. This is the other thing that everybody. This is the main reason I don't like going back to Sonic Mania too often.
Yeah, I was about to make this point as well. You should make it though because you're more Scottish than I am.
Okay, I think that's a good reason. The thing about Sonic Mania's bosses is that they have been thought through. Like, to the nth degree. It's like, okay, so here is a scenario, here is the unique thing the player needs to do, here is kind of like the cinematic aspect to it, you know, and I hate to disparage that effort. I like Sonic Mania a heck of a lot.
I'll disparage it.
But the thing is, for me, is that what the strength of Sonic's bosses is that they were always a bit knockabout. It was like a brash, cathartic way to end a level.
The bosses are your reward for finishing a level.
Yeah, and it's like...
Which is that you get to twat Dr. Robotnik in the face over and over again with very little pushback.
If you manipulate Sonic's physics well enough, you can, like, bounce on him, like, 8 times in quick succession and basically end the boss right there and then.
Oh, didn't that feel good when you got the balance right and you were just at the top, bopping him on the head?
Good. And the elemental shields in Sonic 3 add a layer of strategy to that. Yeah. Like if you know what's coming, you can choose the best shield for the job ahead of time. And it's so good. And it feels so good because it's just Dr. Robotnik appears and you're like, right, you fanny boys. Boom, boom, boom. Deed.
Yeah, he's right.
He's right. He is right. But that's what I...
He's right. Because a lot of bosses in almost every game, the point of the boss is like, try and do this. You'll find it hard. You'll find it frustrating. But when you get through it, you'll be like, fee you. Not Sonic 3. Not all the other Sonic games, really. Like, you just... Here he is. Bounce around on him. Get him. Go on, get him. It'll be
fun.
You know
what? I'll tell you what it makes me think of, and this is the most obtuse comparison imaginable, I think, is it reminds me a little bit of when you've played Arkham City and you've done all the Riddler puzzles and you finally get to just beat the shit out of the Riddler.
I did not persevere enough to get to that bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I did, and it does.
Yeah, you can just basically, unless I'm misremembering it, you can more or less uninterruptedly beat the crap out of him.
It is essentially a reward at the end
of it. And, I mean, the thing is, Robotnik is a bit of a... Okay, no. You know what? Here's the thing. Robotnik's a big, fat loser.
Mm-hmm.
So he should be beaten by Sonic, who is cool.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, Robotnik shouldn't win against Sonic. I mean, have you seen the Sonic cartoon? He's an idiot.
Yeah.
That's why Satayam is so rubbish, because they made Robotnik actually scary. He's not scary. No. He's a big loser.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. Like, for me, it's Dr. Robotnik is at his best when he is walking a very fine line between, like, kind of being this absolute comical buffoon and also being threatening. And not threatening in a genuine, like... I'm actually intimidated or frightened of this man. Threatening in it, he introduces stakes and drama for our heroes to go and sort out. And, like, that's what he does in Sonic 3. Because up until this point, up until you see, like, him distantly, like, shadowed in the background, flying between the trees whizzing past, so you're seeing him through the trees in the background, he hasn't made an appearance yet. Like, the first boss you've seen hasn't been him, which is a first for the series. Maybe this is what the rest of the game is like. And then he's making that appearance, and it's like, is that him? Is that him in the background? Oh, is it like, is this what's going to happen? And then he bursts through the waterfall at you. And it's like, what a cinematic moment. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I'm not saying tense as in genuinely stressful, but what a, like, a tense little moment that is relieved with that brash, cathartic knockabout, beat him up. Just, and his wee expressions grimacing at you.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I think that this game, through visual storytelling once again, and I'm going to be skipping ahead a bit if that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
Does portray Robotnik somewhat evolving as a villain into a more threatening villain.
Oh,
because
definitely.
In this game, the gloves kind of come off at one point. I mean, you're kind of clued in, I think, when you fight the launch base zone boss, and he fights you with the squeeze tag machine, I think it's called, because that's the most visceral machine he's ever had.
Yeah.
In which he just literally grabs you and just body slams you into the ground. But then, of course, skipping way ahead, when you find the buried death egg and it actually activates and nukes a zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While you're standing in it, you'll realize then and there, you're like, ah.
Like,
we may not be in Adventures anymore. I think we might be in Satayam now.
Well, he is properly relentless. Like, not only is he kind of pulling out the stops so far as, like, manipulating somebody else goes, but also every single one, like, everything he is, all of his activities on the island, it is a full-on invasion. It is a full-on, like, yeah. I am going to win this or I am going to destroy everything. Like, there's no reason for him to burn the forest down except to possibly maybe kill Sonic.
Yeah.
And it's... He is pulling out all the stops, and there are multiple times... what you were saying about the launch base, the squeeze tag machine is, like, the third in a sequence of, like, four bosses.
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah.
He's not fucking around. He's just like, right, okay, that didn't work. What about this? Bam, bam, bam. Okay, that didn't work, but what about this one?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, and I mean, I'm the one who instigated, I know, but so, I don't want to say too much about it because we are obviously going to get there at some point because I'm attentive to the fact that we might only get through one zone in this podcast, and I could not be more delighted by that. Like, this is the kind of detail I have sought in my Sonic analysis. But we need to talk about, obviously, the very end of this zone.
This is continuing
the theme, which is once you have defeated this not very difficult boss, by design, not very difficult, you destroy the flying the egg capsule, whatever it's called, which has your friends in it. Okay, as in the previous games, is at this time it's not just in the middle of the screen; it's flying above you, which is another fun little addition. Then you run to the right in cutscene mode and you find yourself standing on a bridge where you get your first zone transition. Now, this is brand new as well.
Yeah.
Previous Sonic zones ended with a fade to black, I believe.
Yeah, like a normal game.
Yeah, and then you would just appear in the next area regardless. In this zone, in this game, they go out of their way to make it clear, even if it's a little bit contrived.
Yeah.
How you went from this place to the next.
Yeah, they create with little cutscenes at the end of each level leading into the next one, they create... Oh, another thing to mention is that Act 2 of each zone, is it just a continuation?
Oh,
in this
God,
game?
We didn't even mention that.
No, you just carry on. It just goes, all right, now it's Act 2. And it doesn't put you anywhere new. You just carry on. And now you're in Act 2.
Look, this is what it says about this game, is we have gone into the most disgusting... detail about this, and we've missed so much stuff.
Yeah, we still keep thinking of stuff. Yeah, but between the actual different zones, there are these little cutscenes which just create the feeling that what you are in is a place rather than a game. Which I've always said is actually, I think that's what sets Sonic apart from games like Mario. You know, though Mario feels like assault courses, Sonic feels like places.
Never
more than this one game. And perhaps I don't think ever again as much as this one.
No, they tried to do it in Sonic Mania, but I think they had to patch some of them in eventually. But, God, the sense of continuity massively adds to the storytelling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because just going from one place to another counts as part of a story. And in most games, you didn't even get that.
No. And so it'll be things like, generally speaking, correct me if I'm misremembering here, but usually it's that Knuckles shows up at the end of the level, goes tee-hee-hee, and does something that makes you be in the next level.
I think that happens...
I think it's a couple of times.
A couple of times.
It's not as many times as I'm remembering, is it?
No, it's actually not.
That starts to happen, like, in the levels themselves. He introduces a new obstacle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's well, that's exactly what happens here, is you're on the bridge, you have nowhere else to go. Okay, Stumper, where do you go from here? And then Knuckles appears in the ledge above you, sniggers at you, stamps down on a switch, and the bridge comes out from under you. So twice in one zone, this guy has gotten the better of you.
He's got the drop on you.
He's plopped you down into a sewer.
It's gone from insult to injury, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, and like, now you're really mad. Now you're like, right, okay, I'm going to sort this guy out.
Yeah, I'm going to give him what for?
But you think that you've been dropped into a sewer and you think, oh, this is bad. And then two things happen. One, as you fall down the big waterfall into the new level, one, it looks lovely, and you're like, oh, hello. And yeah. two, the music kicks off, and you're like, oh, hello, because it's one of the grooviest, best tunes of Mega Drive's ever played.
I'm just going to say it, yeah, straight up. Hydra City, probably my favourite tune.
Yeah, probably.
But I'd have to give it to Act 2 mix. Is that a... Do you think that's a controversial opinion?
You are allowed... do you know what? I think mine, it seems to be... Well, you always feel like your own opinion is the controversial one because you don't like pushback.
Don't.
But I have had a lot of pushback from saying that the first level is the best one.
Now, the first level is amazing with this kind of new jack swing kind of thing going on, right?
Uh-huh.
But the second level, lest we forget, it has the bit that goes... And it keeps going and going and going and building and building into then it's like
you're right there. Do you know what? I always forget because I just think that the initial Act One is groovier than
but
then I forget how good it gets. You're right.
Dave, after it's done that bit, it keeps going until it's going, da, 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 and then it starts again.
Even that bit in Act Two. I'm act agnostic. I love Hydro City, all of it from.
You're
from
agnostic.
Agnostic. Yeah, I love that whole level. The thing about that because I agree with Dave in so far as like the is like a really funky, great upbeat way to introduce a zone. But in the second act, like the kind of the stumbling kind of like descending fill on the toms and everything, like with the snare played on the offbeat and everything. And then the wall comes in to try and crush you. It's so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, this goes to listeners and to you two. Do watch and do sit and go through and watch the videos you can find on YouTube right now where someone has basically got all of the separate channels of all of the tunes, but it's the Hydro City ones that I think are the best, on oscilloscope view. So you can
I've seen those. Those are outstanding, yeah.
And whoever it is has, like, switched off and on and built up different channels in quite an artful way so that by the end you are... up out of your seat, arms in the air, dancing to how good this music is. And you get to see the intricacies of it inside out. And it's so much more than I thought was in there when you see it laid out in front of you.
That's my dad. My dad. He's got a heart hang. Somebody stop him.
Yes!
Not that.
I'm
boss.
Coming to get you in.
Sorry.
Bit of Lemmy there, sorry. God, that's probably my favourite Lemmy bit ever.
So good.
I'm coming to get you.
I miss your boss, son. I miss her so much.
It's so perfectly bleak and yet amazingly funny at the same time.
I was so annoyed, right? I tried so hard poking around maps of Scotland on Google Image Search, trying to find what street it was that he goes around... saying she's turned the winds against us,
yeah.
Because I wanted to post a picture of that same street, but without it being a screenshot from that sketch, and do hashtag liminal spaces. And
that
whole thing came and went, and I never found out where it was, and I never got to do it.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you should be. I'm sad.
It's really sad. So, yeah, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Sonic. So, Hydro City Zone, we've talked about the transition from the previous stage.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've talked about the fact that it means that you enter this stage in a way that you've never entered any Sonic stage before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is in free fall as the rest of the stage, as the ceiling collapses around you.
And he has a unique sprite for this. It's not just his idle pose.
Yo.
No.
You know, what we didn't mention is that the Sonic sprites have been redrawn in this game.
I think I did mention that.
Oh, we did mention that. Sorry. Okay. Well, I didn't really listen to you guys. I just like to hear my own analysis.
This is another point of controversy. I think whenever I say that this is by far the best sprite of Sonic, a lot of people will go, no, come on, Sonic 2 is better, or Sonic 1, or whatever it is they prefer. But God, I love it. It's so round and squishy squashy, and he looks great.
There's two things. Number one is, like, when people say that the... Like, listen, if you prefer the Sonic 1 and 2 sprites, fuck, more power to you, absolutely. But the thing about the Sonic 3 sprite for me is that what they always do is they always blow them all up and examine them closely side by side. Yeah. And it's like, that's not how it's viewed. It's viewed very small, like, on what is supposed to be a bloody CRT screen. Mm.
Yeah.
And so, yes, sure, like, maybe one leg is thicker than the other and it looks weird when it's right up in your face, but on screen it gives him a little bit of perspective, and like he's very rotund, he's very nice and kind of like pudgy. The thing that always gets me with my Sonic designs, and the reason I prefer Sonic 3 to Sonic 1 and 2, is if his cheek is right up against his eye, that's good for me. It's when his it's when his eye and his cheek are kind of like separated at the edge that it looks a little bit like, I don't want to say like amateur to me, but it looks a little bit like incomplete, because that's what I like about him so much, is that his cheeks and his eyes are so defined. Totally a preference thing. I'm not trying to be holier than thou about it, but
No, be holier than thou. This is just, own it, mate. Like, all right, don't. These people are cretinous. Don't apologize.
Sorry,
to them.
Sorry, mate. You prefer Sonic 1? Sorry, which one of us is on Retronauts here?
Oh, beautiful. Now, Hydro City, probably worth putting into some context. This is an interesting zone for me, not only because I love it. I don't think it's my favourite zone. It is my favourite tune, I think. But it's not my favourite zone. Now, the thing that fascinates me so much about this zone is it takes an established Sonic theme, which is the water level, and makes it fast-paced and dynamic, which is not what the water levels have been previously.
No, that's the thing. I never thought of that. Famously, in like Sonic 1, whenever you get a water level, everyone hates it. It's like, it's so slow and sluggish. Whereas in Sonic 3, if I want to feel fast, if that's what I'm here for playing today, I'm going to Hydro City.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
I mean,
it's so fast that you can get so fast that you run on the surface membrane of the water.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Because
how
you're so
that?
Fast.
Like, that's not been done in Sonic before, I believe, right? This is the first time we see it.
No, Sonic 2 on the Master System let you skim on the water if you're moving quickly.
Yeah, okay.
But nobody knows that except me, because I played it.
I described it as a sewer earlier, and I think it literally is, but that calls to mind just like plodding around like samey looking corridors and everything. No, this is a roller coaster. Yes,
sewer level, ding. Sorry.
Like, this is a roller coaster. I would love to be a poo down here.
Oh, no. No. This is the fascinating thing, Shay. That sounded so condescending, it wasn't meant to. It's not a roller coaster. It's a water park.
Yeah!
You're absolutely right.
The imagery is flumes.
Yeah.
It is water slides. You are at Splash Mountain. Take me now.
Yeah. In this level, there are
Bounce
big...
Splashmore, that's it.
In this level, there are big, big water slides, which you, like, a thing grabs you and kind of speeds you up and lets you go. And you know, because you've been playing Sonic for a while now, that you need to hold down, get into a roll, and you can get such speed up that it's just like, I'm remembering it now, how fast it is, and my heart rate is going up. It's incredible.
The thing with this level is, now, you could do this in Aquatic Ruin as well.
Uh-huh.
If you don't want to go in the water, or you don't want to spend any amount of time in the water that could see you drown, I'm reasonably certain you can mitigate almost all of it by flying with Tails.
Oh, really?
Because from the start of the level, if you fall to the left, if you hold left as you fall in, you'll land on a platform with a super ring.
Oh.
And from there, you can fly to the right, and you're just...
I didn't know you could do that!
...up in the air, and you're not doing that whole tunnel bit at all.
Yeah.
There is so many routes to this game. Like, believe me. I might be wrong in saying you can mitigate all of it, but I'm reasonably certain that 90% of the time, if you're underwater, you'll be going at high speed up a ramp.
Yes. Like, this is what they seem to have been very careful to do, is make it so that all the time spent in the water is, A, entirely of your volition, because they always give you an easy way out, and B, a lot of the time it's pretty fun being underwater. There are fun
bits. The only
bits.
Exception being the bit where you're stuck on those on those goey roundy things with fish nibbling at you. I don't like those bits.
No.
You know the goey roundy things that are like conveyor belts? You shimmy along under them like.
Oh, no, yeah. No. I know the bit you're talking about, bubble shield, yeah. Bounce into Badnik, you get straight out of there.
Right, that's the thing. Now, that's the other thing is that, that's another way of mitigating all of the underwaterness. Yes. There's a lot of bubble shields in this level. But and there's that really... Go on.
No, sorry. Possibly interestingly, possibly not.
Yes.
Because of the fact that when you're underwater, you don't move very well to the left or right, only vertically, the water sections that you are likely to have to play through are almost all kind of vertical, either going up or down.
Yeah.
And then it'll propel you into a tunnel that doesn't matter anyway because your speed is kind of controlled by the tunnel. Usually there's a spring that will propel you along as well if you're in a horizontal plane.
Yeah.
There are loads and loads and loads of places to get more air. They really did not skimp on them.
I know intellectually that it is true that Sonic walks slower left and right in the water. Yeah. I can't conjure in my mind an image of ever doing that in Hydro City Zone.
No.
It must be so
it's
vertical,
vanishingly rare
so
occurrence.
Springy.
Yeah. And God, I just don't know what else to say about it. It's just there is so much I could start from. You know what I mean? Like the water itself. I mean, the way that this turns the water level on its head is just like outstanding. Like it could not be. I don't like. It's not subversive because that's not the word to use. But the fact is, they do identify what makes those levels a drag, and they go, "No, fuck that. We're just not going to do that."
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to do fun stuff this time. We're going to have water slides that propel you out. You start out of the water, go underwater, end up again and going across the water, back into the water again, back up, shooting up into the sky. Not just into the sky, through multiple stories of the level.
Yeah.
Getting teasing glimpses on the left and right of places that you've never seen before that you could have gone.
That bit where you've shot up a ramp so high you go up multiple stories, and then you come down again, and you're like, oh, I know where I'm going to land, because there's a little telemonitor, and if you just bounce off it and burst it, you're straight back up again, aren't you?
It's so good, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, of course, if you choose not to do that, and you choose to explore those unusual moving platforms that you saw, you'll find a super ring there.
Yep.
Yeah, like, this is like, Sonic's physics are such that if you land on top of a Badnik, you will return to the same height you were at. You will turn to the crest of your jump, which is an incredible way to extend your height and distance in the air. And there are so many opportunities in Hydro City Zone to absolutely rocket, like from the bottom of the level straight to the top, back down to the bottom and straight back up in this incredible
and
bounce.
Always fair and square. Always fair and square. Always with the physics. Always with a ramp or hitting a TV monitor because you fell on it so far. Never just a little script.
And absolutely never into a wall of spikes or a bottomless pit. There are no bottomless pits on this stage, if memory serves.
Yes.
The only instant death is in Act 2, and that's with that wall, which is the first real challenging part of the game. Is that fair to say?
I think so, yeah.
Because when I was a kid, that place was a nightmare. Like, I had real trouble with that, because it really does stress you out. Even to this day, I get quite stressed out by that, even though I know I can do it.
Yeah, well, same.
Like, it's like the climb in Chemical Plant is that it's more... I would say it's more panic-inducing than it is really, like, technically difficult.
Agreed, yes, absolutely.
If you keep your cool, that bit is fine.
Yeah, it's fine, agreed. Totally agree, yeah. I mean, Hydro City is just a... let me think about this for a second. Of the Sonic 3 zones, might be my favourite. I can't think of one I like more right now. I mean, Ice Cap is good, but it's not Hydro City.
Again, I need to re-clarify what is happening here. We are talking about a water level in a Sonic game.
Yeah.
Stu has just said that's possibly my favourite in Sonic 3, and we are sat here like, yeah, absolutely, that is fair. Yeah. Yeah. That's how good it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole package of like interesting visuals, clean visuals as well. With it, but if you do stop and look at them, as with all of these games, which I, by the way, I strongly recommend that you, and this counts for Sonic 2 as well, one, stop and just look at those backgrounds you're running past sometimes, yeah, because they are good looking. Like the background on Casino Night in Sonic 2 is wild shit to me. Like somebody drew that.
Oh God, yeah, I know.
It's wild. But Hydro City, if you look in the background here, now, am I wrong in saying that there's a little bit of foreshadowing going on with the ruins and the murals and things? Am I wrong about that?
I think you're right. I mean, it could just be that they went, what do we put here? What have we already got in the sprite set? Okay, that. But well, still.
It's a bit, it's sort of, I mean, as we've said, it's think of the Labyrinth Zone from Sonic 1.
Yeah.
Which is ancient ruins as well. And it starts, or at least opens, there's that one bit in Labyrinth where you're permanently sliding until you interrupt the slide and solve a little puzzle.
Yeah.
And it feels like this game, in a sense, kind of went like, hey, you know that bit where you were sliding on a water slide? That was fun. Let's really lean into that. So you end up with these utterly memorable and brilliant visuals as well on those blue water underwater slides that snake around. And then propel you up into... Oh, it's just so good, isn't it? I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. The fact that the water slides have cascading water coming from above, like, it's all in-universe. It's not just some bullshit that's floating there. It's just some...
Yes.
It's all part of the construction. It all feels very organic, despite the fact it's obviously floating platforms and floating slides and...
It's... The thing... And, God, this is absolute turbo nerdery.
That's what we're here for.
But somebody had to have built this place. Like, Sonic, the first zone, Angel Island, is very natural. You know, it could just be an island. Hydro City suggests civilization, and that is fleshed out more in the very next zone.
Yes.
Which, of course, we're not talking about just now.
Well, but I know, though I have a... This has only just occurred to me. Do you think that when Knuckles was springing up and twatting Sonic in his stupid ugly face at the beginning of Angel Island, do you think he came up from Hydro City? Do you think he was zooming around in the what STC called the Zoom Tubes? Is that Hydro City? Were they called Zoom Tubes?
Yeah, they were. They were a network all over the island, though. They were.
But do you think they were inspired by the Hydro City slides and pipes? And
I think they were, because there's a few bits like that in Sonic 3, like with the little you know, the little spinny tubes before the flying battery at the end of Angel Island. But also, yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that in Hydro City. Like, there's a bit underwater where you're being pushed along by the current and you have to stop and hold on to pipes.
The bars, the horizontal pipes, the sort of vertical pipes, yeah.
Yeah, to shimmy up and down them to avoid spikes. It's, again, like Dave says, this is all done using the mechanics. It's all in your control. It's never like a scripted set piece. It's all a slightly different variation on the theme of going fast.
Yeah.
And it's fun as hell. There isn't a moment of it that isn't exciting.
The thing that I love as well is, even when you're done doing that, when you burst out from the floor or the wall, it sends bricks flying everywhere. It's like you're smashing this place to pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what we haven't talked about at all, even for Angel Island, because we've just been so enthused by so much other stuff, is we haven't talked about the Badniks.
Oh?
We haven't talked about them.
Those little guys.
I have a little theory here. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Badniks in Sonic 3 and Knuckles might be the weak link compared to the other games?
Go on.
Because while this is my favourite Sonic game by some distance, I think some of the Badniks are kind of lame. Like, the Rhinobot's just a kind of lame version of the Motobug to me.
I'll give you that. They're not as iconic as they were in
the
Sonic
monkey.
1 and 2.
The monkey in the tree is basically just coconuts again.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So I wonder if and in Hydro City, you've got this thing called Turbo Spike, and all it does is fire a spike that's pretty much not going to hit you and then drive away.
I like him, though.
Oh, he is funny, yeah. No, I'm not saying they're horrible. It's just that I wonder if they might be something that we could reasonably consider a step down.
I tell you what's a good Badnik that is a step up, and that is the Badnik that's disguised as some spikes.
Oh God, yes, that's genius. I retract my entire point.
They're good, because so you think there's spikes, but it's actually a Badnik,
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt you to go on top of it. It's a spring. No.
And it makes a twangy sound. It's great.
And it goes dwing like a spring. But if you get him with your little Insta shield that you've got, by the way, listeners, you can just pop him. And it's really fun if you get that angle just right, because you have to be good at the game to do that.
I wonder if the fact that the levels are so much bigger and you're so much more capable means that the enemies naturally do feel a little bit more perfunctory.
Maybe. I haven't felt this, though. I like them. But I do agree that there's no crab meat. There's no buzz bomber. Like, I know the Sonic 1 badniks, like, little guys I know. The Sonic 2 badniks to a lesser extent, but still, they're quite iconic. And then this, yeah, there's just a load of different robots, isn't there?
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if it's maybe, like, to what extent it's, like, fatigue or, like, okay, we've seen badniks before. But, yeah, absolutely. I will absolutely agree that, like, for example, Motobug is really iconic and Rhinobot is just a bit eh.
Well, he looks smaller and less impressive to me. Like, there are some badniks that I like in this game. I do wonder if it's something that could be considered a absolute cast iron, less good than Sonic 2 thing, because there's so few of them to go around, you know? But then again, even Sonic 2, I think, is a step down from Sonic 1 in terms of badniks.
Well, the thing is...
I agree with that, yeah.
There's a lot of badniks in Sonic 1 and 2 that I find just annoying to deal with. Like, Caterkiller is, I think, a great idea that just sometimes doesn't work for me. I'm fairly sure there have been times that I have just come at it from the front, not even jumping, just in a ball, and the hit registration's gone a little bit wonky, so it's like falling to pieces, and I take a hit, and it just feels a bit like, ugh, okay. Yeah. I certainly think there's a strong case could be made that the badniks in Sonic 3 visually are less distinct, less iconic. But I think mechanically they are a very nice balance between being like fun to engage with.
I have a theory about this. I have a theory, actually, that's just popped into my head about this. Now, while as Sonic becomes more capable, the badniks become less of a threat. Because in 2, like, you gain the power to spin dash, which means that if you're horizontal, you can still kill badniks. And the way that they mitigate that is they make the badniks more annoying. So you've got the one on Casino Night, for example, which I still don't really understand reliably how to kill. You've got the flasher badniks that will, at turns, just be invincible.
Yeah.
And will hurt you. Sonic 3, it feels like they kind of went, well, everyone's going to be plowing through these anyway, so it doesn't really matter if they are. So why don't we just make them things that you can bop through and get some points?
Well, you see...
Because any enemy in this game... Just real quick, sorry.
You're right.
Any enemy in this game that has a state that can hurt you will never be in that state when you first encounter it, unless you're very, very unlucky.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because, like, the balloon spike enemies, they're always in the air, and you're not hugely likely to be at a point where you're flying towards one without having some idea of what they are and what they do. Like, the ones in Lava Reef, the mole enemy things, the rock enemy things, they will not explode for a few seconds.
Yeah.
You'll always have time to get away from them. So to me, it feels like a conscious decision. Like, yeah, they're kind of pushovers, but also the way we mitigated it in the previous game was kind of unfair.
Well, I think this is part of that balance that we've talked about already with Dr. Robotnik, where, like, the badniks in this game are just fun to bop through.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's like we're talking about with Robotnik. You know, previously, some of the bosses could be a bit of a pain in the ass, maybe, sometimes. By now, it is just fun to fight him always. And that's true with the robots. Like, there are robots in the Metropolis Zone, for example, that we're still traumatized by now because of how unfair and annoying they are.
Oh,
and there's no such thing in this game, really. There's maybe a couple that will make you go, like, oh, no, one of these. But generally speaking, you're Sonic. You're here to bop, and it's fun and it feels good.
Honestly, I'm really trying to think of a badnik, a standard badnik in one of the main zones, that when I see them, I go, this guy. And I'm really struggling to think of one.
Do you know what? Yeah, I said that because I assumed there were, but I can't think of any either.
The scorpions in Sandopolis, but even then you can get them by spin dashing them.
Yeah. Well, that's the balance, isn't it? To see a guy and go like, oh, he's got a thing that's going to get me, but I'm cleverer. I'm good at Sonic. Got him.
Man, honestly.
I guess I'll just say the little nibbly fish.
I hadn't really thought about this until just now, and my appreciation for this game is just going up and up.
It has been years since I started playing this game.
Yeah.
And every time I go back to it, there's something new to appreciate. Yeah. There's something new. And to like, it's gotten to the point where a lot of the old stuff that wowed me at the beginning is now normal. And then I go back and I think about that anew, and I'm like, God, how amazing was that? Yeah. And it's got all this new stuff.
Outside of the gimmicks of Hydro City, I think we've covered those quite extensively now. Should we talk about the bosses?
Nah.
Yes.
Nah, just fuck it. Leave it. Just forget it. No, I mean, because the mini boss on Act 1 is incredibly memorable.
Yes, yeah.
For a lot of people, which I believe is straight up called Robotnik's Washing Machine. Am I wrong there?
Is it?
The spin dryer sort of thing. But yeah, he is what it is, sort of. You're in a sort of basin of water.
Yeah.
And this thing comes down with these kind of, I want to call them parabolas going around it. Is that a thing?
Yes.
And then it will fly around.
I don't know if it's this thing, but it's a thing.
It will fly. Okay, well, that's all I need to know. It will fly around, sweep through the water, which you can then jump over it to dodge it.
Yeah.
And it will land on a pole in the middle of the stage and start spinning it, which then spins you around in a sort of centrifuge.
Yeah.
Oh my, I've just found its name. It's not Robotnik's Washing Machine. It's somehow better.
Yeah.
It's called the Big Shaker.
Perfect. Oh. I honestly think I might have had a guide when I was a kid that called it Robotnik's Washing Machine. Because you know how these things kind of, you latch onto them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's all it does, and it's quite an easy boss. It's just, it's quite memorable. I mean, the main danger is the fact that you're stuck underwater, and if you're not lucky with your timing, if you're a little bit foolish, once it traps you in the spin cycle and you have no way of getting out of the water, you could actually drown.
Yes, that boss, if you don't know what to do, that boss is actually quite annoying, but it's not that hard to find out what to do.
You'll only die to that boss once, I would say.
Hmm. Oh, no,
unless you're really shit.
Sorry, I've got a very important update here. It's called Dr. Robotnik's Whirlpool Machine in Sonic the Comic.
That's right, why, because a Whirlpool is a washing machine brand. That's
maybe
you're
that's where
of.
I've got it from. Maybe, you know what, I'm going to have to look at my Sonic 3 official play guide, except I think I sold it to one of you Sonic saddos.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at a plush Sonic right now. I haven't got a leg to stand on. Unlike Sonic, who has really fast, good legs to run on.
He's got a good pair of legs on him, that lad.
Can I talk about the glitch that I really love here on Sonic 3, where if you are just about to drown, wait till the music cuts out and then exit the water, it changes to the Sonic and Knuckles music.
Oh,
I didn't realise.
Yeah, you know the Sonic 3 mini-boss music with the...
Come on!
Yeah, well, if you wait under the water for the whole cycle to go through.
Yep.
When it drops out right at the end and you're about to drown, if you then spin dash out, it will start playing the Sonic and Knuckles music, which is a glitch. And it's also kind of a wild glitch, because I imagine anyone who discovered it independently somehow prior to
Sonic
and Knuckles being out.
On just a Sonic 3 cartridge, it does that?
Yeah, because you don't hear that music on the Sonic 3 and Knuckles combined cart.
No, quite.
You should give it a try. It's an interesting little glitch, I think.
That is one thing I will say. We hadn't mentioned this, but like some music tracks change. Some Sonic 3 music tracks are changed when you plug in Sonic and Knuckles as well. But the Sonic 3 solo mini boss theme is incredible, because it like it's so cheeky and funky, and it's like it's like almost like a dance battle or something. And it starts out and it literally goes, come on!
You know what it reminds me of, genuinely? Sonic CD, work that sucker to death. Come on now, work that sucker to death. It feels like of a piece with that to me.
Yeah.
What an utterly bizarre, like, Sonic always had his finger on the pulse of pop culture, and what other series would you have like a game mascot that's like sampling stuff from like Xavier and Bob Marley and has actual Michael Jackson vocalization samples specifically for that game in it?
You know, you say that he did have the finger on the pulse of pop culture, but the promotional single tied in with Sonic 3 was, in fact, Wonder Man by Whiteside Fred.
Which is, you know, and they're getting all bammed up by the pirate STC guys in that music video.
Yeah. And they're getting all bammed up in real life by becoming massively right-wing.
Imagine if,
right-wing,
like,
said Fred.
Nice.
Hey, get ready for this, guys. Wait, let me just say this hilarious joke. Do you mind?
Okay.
Shite, said Fred.
Yay!
Got him.
Wreck.
What they should have done is they should have got Bernd Cribbins himself in.
Yes.
Agreed.
All right, said Fred. Have to take the door off. Need more space to shift the so-and-so. Had bad twinges, taking off the inches, and it got us nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And
right, said Fred. Oh, can we get that on the soundtrack, please, Edison? Thank you. Have a cup of tea, then. No, I'll stop. So, Hydro City, you've got Robotnik's washing machine. That is what it's called. It's canon now.
Okay.
And the second boss there, after you've encountered Knuckles once again to do much the same thing, to blow up a bridge that you're standing on,
It's called, and this is a very catchy title from STC, is Dr. Robotnik's Water Spout and Depth Charge Machine. Which is what I'm going to start calling it when I have to take a pee and a poo at the same time.
Wow, good one. Actually, I did enjoy that. I'm going to think about that every day. Now, this is quite an interesting one because it's a little bit unlike what we've said about it being kind of breezy. I mean, it's very hard to get hit by this boss. But to actually damage it is surprisingly difficult. Though there are multiple ways to do it, of course.
Sorry, I've got the wiki up in front of me, and I need to put this on record.
Okay.
Because this is fascinating to me. It is, the wiki begins, the Egg Vortex, also known as Dr. Robotnik's Water Spout and Depth Charge Machine, or Dr. Robotnik's Water Spout and Depth Charge Machine. And I was looking for the difference between the two for ages. They've changed the and to an ampersand.
That's it, is it?
That is some fucking dedication to accuracy there.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. And it's because of this that I think that anyone who does contribute to Wiki should be exsanguinated in front of their family. But this boss is quite interesting to me because you have two ways of hitting it, which is the sort of the easy way, which is to jump on the whirlpool as it lowers from the machine, or the hard way, which is to use the explosion from the bombs to propel you into the air.
Yeah, that feels like it's what you're supposed to do.
I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I think while it is an option, I think that the way of climbing on the vortex is like so much easier. But now that you mention it, it is quite difficult. You only have a few seconds of leeway there.
Mm.
So maybe you're right. Maybe that is what you're supposed to do.
See, you're supposed to do all of it.
We've got, like, this is the thing. This boss now has, like, and once you're up there, you can get a good few hits in, like, if you're good enough with the physics.
Yeah.
That's two ways to attack this boss. The third way is if you have the bubble shield, you can bounce and get enough height at the peak of it to hit him without hitting the propeller and damaging yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great boss!
No, it's brilliant. And the timing of it, like, the way... this is the one, isn't it, where he's going left and right and dropping those little bombs. And the little spouts of them, the timing of it, means that if you just go, oh, he's dropped one, I'll get on that. Wrong. You'll never get him with that. You have to wait until he comes back again to cross over that one. And, like, there's a little bit of timing involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that makes it challenging to use the bombs is that I believe they propel you fully off screen. Or at least they can do. Which means you've got to then navigate sort of invisibly to land on him for a second.
Yeah, because he's right at the top of the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Shay, remember when we played this at yours and I beat him and then the game locked up and I just drowned?
I think so, yeah.
I have a video of it because it was completely organic. I was just filming having beaten the boss and Sonic went into his celebratory that whole thing.
Yeah.
But then it disappeared and he wouldn't move. He was still stuck in his I'm celebrating animation. The cutscene didn't trigger and then the drowning animation kicked in.
Okay, so I didn't know that you'd been round the Shamey's house, right?
And yeah, many times.
Oh, right, well, I didn't know
that's
that.
That's not true, it was only once.
Okay, is that you've gone to... it's a long way away, that's a trip. And you've gone there, and you're just sat on the couch playing Sonic.
Well, what do you want us to do, like, kiss?
Obviously! You've gone to so much trouble.
You know, I'm not going to talk about that on the podcast now, am I?
Oh, okay.
So after you've beaten this boss, Hydro City Zone is over. How do you get into Marble Garden again?
There's a big bidet comes up from under the ground and shoots you.
That's
up.
That's right. It just blasts you back up again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the plus side, Sonic's anus very clean.
Oh, you got the performer.
So then, yep, you're blasted into the air and you fall straight into Zone 3 Marble Garden. And to my genuine astonishment, we've reached the point where I'd like to end the podcast.
Mm.
And we've only managed to do 2 levels. Well done, guys.
This might be the start of an ongoing series.
It has to be. It has to be. I mean, the fact is, this is such a dense game and we're such dense people that... It can only take forever, you know. But now that we've done the basics, the introductions, as well as the first 2 levels, I think in the next one, I think we could quite easily finish Sonic 3.
Yes, we'll speed up.
Yeah, I think from here.
Yeah, as it would like Sonic. But no, that's not saying that we have to. If we think of enough, if we have plenty of analysis and stuff to say, we can
of course
really get in there. That's the whole point of this. But I'd like to say. I apologize. Has anyone got any thoughts on what we've done so this far before we before we
would
end
anyone
this?
Like to think about what you've done today?
Would anyone like to have would like to think about the things that you've said and done, like to reflect on them by any chance?
Well,
I like Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
I could either have been here this evening gushing about one of my favorite things ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could have been playing Overwatch, which I fucking hate. So thank you so much for this opportunity to not play Overwatch.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You know, I bought Overwatch and I played it for about 5 hours on one day, and I was like, wow, that was really, really fun. I really enjoyed that, and I never played it again ever in my entire life.
You know what? Leave it there. It is. It makes a very strong first impression, and it has a deleterious effect on your life.
I played Overwatch, and my first impression of it was that at no point did I have any clue what was going on at all. And I got very frustrated, and that was that. I was bad at it, listeners.
What I'd like to do now is I'd like to say thank you very much for listening. There will obviously be a continuation of this, because we are not just analysing the first 2 zones in a 14-zone game. This has to come back. I hope you'll all be willing to do that.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
I might have to put a little contract together, force you to. But first of all, before we continue, I'd like to say, Shay, where can listeners find you online if they want to follow your deeds and transpirings?
You can follow me on Twitter at Shaymay, spelled phonetically, Shaymay _. And you can also find me on YouTube. You can type in the same word, Shaymay, and you should find me. I do very long and wordy and waffly game analyses fairly infrequently. You can also find an ongoing comic project that Stu and I are both embroiled in, which is...
Oh, no! Nep Babies. Carry on. Oh, wait, it's Nepo Babies. I got it wrong, didn't I? God. I was thinking of Hyperdimension Neptunia, and I was just so excited thinking about Nep-Nep. Sorry, go on.
I'm bewildered by that. if you fancy reading Stu and I's Sonic fan fiction, you can go to... stconline.co.uk, which is it's slightly more prestigious than I made it sound there. It is like the fans continued the UK's Sonic comic, Sonic the Comic, because it was of a genuinely high quality.
Yeah, Dave, that was a Sonic comic that was put out in the UK. Just in case you're not familiar with it.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Is that
the one that Fleetway's from? That yellow Sonic Fleetway.
Yeah, Fleetway. Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, he's doing a bit, but I felt I saw the red mist descend there for a second.
Oh, yeah, so, Dave, Mr. Palmasar, where can the listeners, even though they know already from your previous appearances, where can we find you?
You know exactly who I am, but if you want to hear me talk about Sonic, specifically that comic we just talked about, go to Sonic the Comic the Podcast. You can find it at stctp.zone, but just type Sonic the Comic the Podcast into something, and you'll find it. And if you're interested in my Sonic fanfics, details will be within.
If you like Retronauts, which is the podcast you're listening to right now, by the way, and you want to support Retronauts and get some more Retronauts content, because if you like Retronauts, what could be better than more Retronauts? For $5 a month, which incidentally is a pitiful amount of money, pathetic amount of money, like nothing. It might as well be nothing, to be honest. Like, if you have $5 in your hands, it's like you've got empty hands as far as I'm concerned. Like, if someone threw $5, if I saw $5 on the floor, I wouldn't even pick it up. I'd step on it out of just spite.
Yeah, and kick whoever the nearest person is.
Yeah, and anyone who did pick up, I'd spit on them and I would go, "You're pathetic." Anyway, no, that's none of that is true.
This is life in Tory Britain.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have now officially become a Tory. Sorry, guys.
Oh, dear.
It was only a matter of time. Apparently, that's what I keep getting told. In the future, you will lose all your principles and become a horrible person. Oh, okay. That sounds bad. Anyway, yes, $5 a month, and you'll get every weekly Monday episode 7 days in advance, as well as 2 full-length bonus episodes per month, 3 This Week in Retro columns and mini podcasts from Diamond Fight, as well as the brand new This Month in Retronauts community podcast with Diamond Fight and myself, just in case you're not sick of my tedious blithering. Oh, it's in pounds, so I've lost complete control of it. For £60 a month, you can set the opportunity of a Retronauts episode, which the topic of a Retronauts episode, which is extremely exciting, because you can get us to talk about, the weather, I suppose, if you wanted to, couldn't you? And there's an even higher tier that lets you guest as an on a segment of Retronauts, so you can come on here and you can personally give me your abuse, which I no doubt deserve. So thanks very much for listening. That's been our Retronauts. We shall return, hopefully this exact same crew, to further pick the bones of Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Yay!
Until they are completely dry of any and all flesh. As you may have gathered, this is a game that I believe all of us hold very close to our hearts. So, yeah, great, great game. And you know what? I'm going to play it probably right now. So, thanks very much. Take care of yourselves. And I know there have been a lot of episodes with me lately. I apologise. This too shall pass.